reduced from $24,900 to $21,900.
For more information, browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R. Or call us at 373-3131. That's 373-3131.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Hartley Carnes. New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle was the owner of the Cirrus SR-20 series airplane that crashed into a building on Manhattan's East Side. He was a low-time pilot, got his license just last year, and now he's gone. Mayor Mike Bloomberg says there was a flight instructor in the plane as well.
What we do know about the passengers is that one was a flight instructor and another one was a student pilot who we think had about 75 hours of experience.
The radar track suggests a flight around the Statue of Liberty before flying up the East River, circles around the lady. That's what pilots call it. WCBS reporter Tim Scheld.
Corey Lytle was so upset at the loss 2 days ago that he spoke to reporters when he was cleaning out his locker. And he was one of the ones who was heavily quoted 2 days ago about how the team lost. And some of his quotes he felt were taken out of context.
Initial fears of possible terrorism dispelled immediately. And the latest from the medical examiner's office is there are two deaths in the incident, both in the airplane. NTSB investigators have arrived to begin their investigation, but since they haven't seen what's left yet, they haven't come to any conclusions yet. President Bush says the U.N. has to get tough with North Korea now, but the U.S. will not go it alone.
No, we won't attack North Korea.
U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan.
I believe that U.S. and North Korea should talk.
President Bush told reporters his administration's been criticized in the past for going it alone without international consensus. Now, people are critical for wanting to involve other nations and say he must. Adam Gadahn, indicted for treason, an English-speaking spokesman for terrorists seen on Arab television.
Although Adam Gadahn is not charged with plotting terrorist attacks, the Justice Department maintains an indictment for treason is appropriate because the 28-year-old Californian betrayed the United States by acting as a spokesman and translator for al-Qaeda. The indictment is based on threats Gadahn is seen making in five videotapes that have been shown around the world since 2004. The treason charge could lead to the death penalty if Gadahn is ever captured.
And CBS's Stephanie Lambidakis. General George Casey says the estimate that 650,000 Iraqi civilians have died in fighting there.
That 650,000 number seems way, way beyond any number that I have seen. I've not seen a number higher than 50,000. And so I don't give that much credibility at all.
The statisticians came up with their huge number by projecting a ratio of homes to one group of known deaths, then extrapolating it all across the nation. If you have a cleaning product called Fabuloso, keep it away from kids. Emergency physicians say it looks like a soft drink, smells fruity, and tastes bland. Kids drink it without realizing it's a cleaning agent. Not deadly, but not much fun either. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 15 points today to close at 11,852. NASDAQ off 7. Oil prices, $57.59 a barrel, down 93 cents. This is CBS News.
Save now at Goodyear. Get up to a $40 mail-in cash card with a purchase of a set of four selected Goodyear tires. Or double your cash card up to $80 when you make your purchase on your Goodyear credit card. And ask your retailer about special financing options when you use your Goodyear credit card. Plus, save big on selected Goodyear tires. Offers end October 28, 2006. Go to GoodyearTires.com or see your participating Goodyear retailer for your mail-in form and complete details. Certain restrictions apply. For the retailer nearest you, call 1-800-GOODYEAR.
We were looking for a home.
CaldwellBanker.com made it so easy. You just type in the zip code.
Or the location.
We saw some terrific Coldwell Banker homes.
I clicked on more listings.
And saw homes from other realtors, too.
It's a great time to be in the market.
Every day across the country, people find the home of their dreams at the same address. CaldwellBanker.com. Coldwell Banker, your perfect partner. Each office is independently owned and operated.
A student protest at Gallaudet University in Washington has shut it down.
Negotiations that had been set for this morning between student leaders and the administration broke down before they ever really got started.
This is no longer a protest. protest. This is a revolution.
The students are still blocking the entrances to the school in protest of the new president, Jane Fernandez, whom they say does not represent enough diversity on campus. The protest has halted classes inside the campus, but near the side gate, several professors.
As you see right now, there's a class going on through the fence.
A spokesman for the school says it's not likely that Fernandez will come out and speak to the students. Hank Silverberg for CBS News, Washington.
Trying to keep dog at home. Dwayne Chapman is the golden-maned bounty hunter with the hit cable show, and he calls himself Dog. Mexico wants to clap him in irons for going there to bring back a fugitive. Mexico outlaws bounty hunting. 29 members of Congress have asked Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to deny extradition of Chapman to Mexico. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
So let's say you go shopping, and you walk into the first store you come to. The store says, hey, no need to shop those other stores. We'll give you our price and theirs, too. Well, you think, that would save you time. But then you come to your senses. How do you really know if you're getting the best deal?
Car insurance websites that promise multiple rate quotes can't speak for GEICO. Shop for yourself at GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Get the good stuff! Even with today's high-tech engines, an oil change every 3,000 miles is still the most important maintenance you can do. It improves fuel economy and dependability and helps you avoid costly repairs. And right now at NAPA, you can get Valvoline conventional motor oil for just $2.39 per quart. Plus, buy six quarts and get a $6 mail-in rebate. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. NAPA. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. We've got a lot to talk about, and there's only 3 hours to do it. But we'll do our level best, and we'll take a lot of your phone calls along the way. This is a live, interactive radio talk show with a progressive slant. And you can call in whenever the urge strikes you, and as long as the First Amendment is still in full effect. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. And if you prefer it all numerically, it's 888-573-8372. Up first today, journalist Dar Jamail will join us. He spent over 8 months in Iraq over the past few years. And we're going to talk about the breaking news related to our occupation there. Coming up next hour, we're going to spend the entire hour with the nation's Washington editor, David Korn. He is also co-author with Newsweek's Michael Isikoff of a powerful new book called Hubris, H-U-B-R-I-S, and it is subtitled The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War, and it's all woven around the Joe Wilson, Valerie Wilson CIA leak escapade. So we're going to go deep on that, and David Korn will be available for your phone calls as well coming up next hour. We've got a breaking story from Mother Jones Magazine, one of our media partners, and Josh Harkinson will join us to kick off the third hour and the free speech zone. And I'll just tell you this, his word is, based on a very reliable source, that Speaker Dennis Hastert will offer his resignation. The timing is not clear, but it appears that that decision has been made, and he made the promise to a friend of his. So we're going to air that out and then take lots of your phone calls on any subject in our third hour today. If you don't get a chance to call me, you can always send me a note by email. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com. And at the website, peterbcollins.com, you can look at a picture of me, read my bio, also listen to archived programs, and there's a link to our live stream. In the event you want to pass it along to somebody who's not within range of one of our great radio affiliates. As we mentioned, Dar Jamail is a journalist who spent a total of 8 months in Iraq. And how many different trips, Dar?
That was four different trips.
Four different trips. A lot of stamps on your passport.
That's right.
And today we are getting some very interesting information that is deeply troubling. And that is that there is a new estimate of civilian deaths in Iraq that is somewhere in the neighborhood of six times higher than the previous working estimates we've been working with. And the number goes as high as about 700,000.
That's right. And as horrible as this news is, the staggeringly high number of deaths, 665,000 is what this new Lancet report is estimating after a rather rigorous scientific study. It's really not that big of a surprise. I'm sorry, 655,000. It's not that big of a surprise when we look at the fact that the first report that came out on October 29, 04, by the same people that was published also in the Lancet, found excess deaths to be around 100,000. Because they said that when they released that first report that this was a very conservative estimate. They knew very, very well they were going to come under a lot of fire and a lot of criticism for putting out this figure, despite the fact that they backed it up with proven scientific methods that are used commonly during the study of famine, mortality rates, and mortality rates for natural disasters. Those figures, of course, never come under criticism. But in a political issue like Iraq, they do come under fire. And so they always erred to the conservative when they released their first survey. Since that time, even just this last February, one of the co-authors of that report and this recent one, Les Roberts, has come out and said, we need to be talking about not whether the figure is in the tens of thousands in Iraq, but is it 200 or 300,000 or even higher? And that was this past February. Since then, they did go in and do a quite extensive cluster sample survey as the methodology they use, and then found that, yes, it's 655,000, and yet even this estimate may well be too low.
Well, and Dar Jamil, the backdrop of this is, of course, war is hell. We know that. And people die during wartime. But the kind of sordid, grisly side of this is that the United States, in launching this invasion and occupation of Iraq, learned a lesson, they say, from Vietnam, and has avoided offering any body counts or even estimates of the civilian carnage. And that has created a kind of guessing game. And it also has sent a message, either intended or otherwise, that we value American lives more than those of others. And we have explicit numbers on how many Americans have been killed in the line of duty in Iraq, how many have been seriously injured. We know those details, in some specifics. But this administration and the managers of the war effort have made it very clear that they have no interest in providing this kind of data.
You're exactly right, Peter, and this is where it gets interesting, because this is where their policy of not keeping a tabulation of Iraqi deaths generated by the invasion and occupation is backfiring. The famous General Tommy Franks quote of, we don't do body counts. Well, at this point, they're probably wishing they had something they could point to that was less than this, even if it was manufactured by the military, i.e. not accurate, because at this point they don't have any ground to stand on. When a survey like this, conducted by 8 Iraqi doctors running around on the ground sampling all of the members in different households all across the country, and they found that most of the evidence they found was even backed up by authentic death certificates. It's really unarguable evidence here, this survey, and I hope we can get a little bit more into the specifics of that in a minute. But the U.S. military doesn't have any ground to stand on if they try to claim that, well, this is too high or this isn't based on science, et cetera, et cetera, just as they did the first survey, because they have no way of proving whether this figure is too high or too low.
Well, and Dar, we will go to those details in a sec, but first, here is the American retort. The military, according to the New York Times, has disputed the Iraqi figures, saying that they are far higher than the actual number of deaths from the insurgency and sectarian violence, in part because they include natural deaths and deaths from ordinary crimes such as domestic violence. But the military has not released figures of its own, giving only percentage comparisons. For example, it cited a 46% drop in the murder rate in Baghdad in August and July as evidence of the success of its recent sweeps. But then in September, they had to backpedal and acknowledge that they had cooked those numbers and not included big categories, like car bombings and those kinds of killings that make up a lot of the death toll in Iraq today. So the military, I think, has a pretty weak response, clearly, on this issue, because they're not in a position to dispute these with figures of their own.
Exactly, and I think we're long since past the time of being able to rely on anything that the military says regarding Iraq as having much truth in it whatsoever. And I want to go into quoting someone, a man named Bradley Woodruff, who's a medical epidemiologist at the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who, when he was defending the first Lancet report, and I imagine we should expect him to probably come out and defend the second Lancet report, he wrote something for the Chronicle of Higher Education, and this was reported on January 27, 2005. And he wrote about one of the co-authors of the first report and also this second report, a man by the name of Les Roberts. And Bradley Woodruff with the CDC, he wrote that Roberts, quote, has used and consistently uses the best possible methodology. Indeed, the UN and the U.S. State Department have cited mortality numbers compiled by Mr. Roberts on previous conflicts as fact and have acted on those results. He, Mr. Roberts, has studied mortality caused by war since 1992, having done surveys in locations including Bosnia, Congo, and Rwanda. His three surveys in Congo for the International Rescue Committee, a non-governmental humanitarian organization in which he used methods akin to those of his Iraq study, received a great deal of attention. Tony Blair and Colin Powell have quoted those results time and time again without any question as to the precision or validity. So really we have a very clear example that these numbers will come into question and will be criticized simply because Iraq is such a political issue. If this was Rwanda, if this was Congo, if this was Bosnia or Sudan, any of these places where these exact same techniques have been used and cited by the U.S. government itself, we won't question it. But when it comes to Iraq, especially with November, 1 month in front of us now, less than that with elections coming up, well, we better pull out the guns and try to discredit this report.
Mm-hmm. Dar Jamail is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and to his credit, he posted an item that appeared at truthout.org and other websites on the 5th of October related to the issues here that we're discussing and the fact that our U.S. military doesn't keep track of the casualties that it causes in this current occupation of Iraq. We're going to drill into the figures and talk about them a little bit more in the next segment, and if you have a question or comment, give us a call. Dar Jamail is with us for another half hour, and my toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372 or 888-5-PETER-B. And you can also find out more information about our guest at his website, darjamailiraq.com. DARJAMAIL, and you know how to spell Iraq.com. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos.
One of the biggest benefits for us are the relationships that we establish with our customers. Our customers have said that they love coming to our place because we have great stuff and great prices.
The thing that makes us unique is the mix of things. It's a very eclectic mix. We've become a destination for a lot of people. They'll bring friends out. They'll do little mini tour buses and bring friends. So we really, really appreciate that. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. We have everything from French soaps to linens to wall hangings.
And it's gotten to the point where people think of us when they need a gift. It's not just a utilitarian purchase or frivolous, but they make us a regular stop when they need a gift.
We're open from 10 to 5 Wednesday through Sunday. Come by and have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Jim Ross of National Real Estate Holdings is back as our special guest on Rock Rollin' Real Estate this Sunday at 10 a.m. Jim has got special offers just for Rock Rollin' Real Estate listeners. He has D.R. Horton Homes giving him a 2% discount on a purchase and a 2% discount towards closing costs to any deal in Austin, Houston, and Fort Worth, Texas that he's involved in. Call him at 866-383-9977. He also has a great deal in Palm Springs, but you have to listen this week to Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Sunday mornings at 10 right here on KRXA.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're talking about the death count of civilians in Iraq. And if you have a question or comment, there's room for your call right now at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I mentioned that war is hell and people die in war. Well, we're kind of stuck in a traffic jam on the road to hell.
Technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road.
And we continue with journalist Dar Jamail. He spent over 8 months in Iraq for different visits over the last few years, and he writes authoritatively at darjamail.com, and you can read his work elsewhere on the web. And Dar, let's talk a little bit about the way these numbers were generated. This new estimate that as many as 600,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed during the war and the occupation since March of 2003. And the folks at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, led by Les Roberts, who, by the way, I interviewed 2 years ago when the initial report was published, and I found him to be very credible and conservative in his estimations. And so they did a survey of about 1,850 households in Iraq and basically asked them how many loved ones they have lost since the U.S. appeared there in 2003. And it is rather stunning what they came up with. The mortality rate before the invasion was about 5.5 people per 1,000. And in the year ending June 06, that rate rose to 19.8 deaths per 1,000. That is very significant.
We're talking about 2.5% of Iraq's entire population have been killed as a result of the U.S. invasion and occupation. 2.5% of a population of roughly 27 million people. Could you imagine if 2.5% of the population of our country were wiped out in for whatever reason, whether it be a natural disaster or massive terrorism attacks or an invasion by another country? This is a staggering figure. And when I have repeatedly been told by Iraqis when I've worked in that country, and even recently now, getting emails from them and talking with them on the phone, and they tell me that they feel that there's a genocide taking place in their country by the occupation forces. Now we understand why they're using this very, very powerful word, genocide, which no one should ever use lightly, but that's why they're using it to describe this occupation of their country. And it's very understandable to see why they're using this term when 2.5% of their entire population are dead as a direct result of the U.S. occupation and invasion.
Now, Dar, perhaps you've had a chance to log on to Johns Hopkins or the British publication Lancet, which is kind of the equivalent of our New England Journal of Medicine, a very prestigious peer-reviewed journal. In the New York Times, they summarize some of this. They say gunshots were the largest cause of death at 56% of all violent deaths. Car bombs were accounting for about 13%. And then without attributing a figure, they simply assert deaths caused by the American military declined as an overall percentage from March 03 to June 06. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that simply shows that the majority of the deaths being generated by the U.S. military, which was the case during the first Lancet report, which again came out in October of 2004. And in that report, they found that 86% of all the deaths were attributable to the U.S. military, and that's primarily because of the invasion. But then when you extend the time period and look at what's happened as a direct result of the death squads, which is very arguable that, well, without a doubt, we have documented evidence that many of these were set up under U.S. supervision. But these death squads now taken into the factoring, the tabulations of this survey, and then extend the period of time. And, of course, the number of people being killed by occupation forces is, of course, dramatically lower. It's down to roughly 30%, a significant percentage of that being airstrike-generated deaths. Mm-hmm. But it's primarily because of the death squads and because we're this much further away now from the initial invasion.
I was going to make a joke, but it's hard to joke about anything in Iraq. And what I was going to say is, well, that number will spike when we retake Fallujah again. But anyway.
Well, actually, I think you have a significant point, because actually I think that it is a joke, but jokes are funny because they usually tend to contain an element of truth in them, just like this one. And the reality is that there may well be another siege of Fallujah. In fact, literally just before this program started, I got information from someone in that city talking about the fact that there's a massive increase of attacks against U.S. forces there. There have already been threats in the last couple of months by the U.S. military, direct threats to people in that city that if you don't help us by turning over resistance fighters, then we may well attack your city again.
And Tal Afar, the town that was held up as a model by George W. Bush of a pacified city that was, you know, growing back together after the pains of war, has been the scene of a great deal of violence over the last week.
Right. It's spreading like never before. And in fact, right now, this month alone, we're looking at a situation in Iraq where we're averaging almost 4 U.S. soldiers every single day being killed right now this month so far.
And the number of serious wounded has spiked significantly as well.
It has. It has. I mean, you can take the number of dead soldiers and multiply it by 10, and you'll be close to the number of wounded. In fact, there's a really useful resource called iCasualties.org website, Iraq Coalition Casualties website, and they monitor coalition deaths, and they keep statistical analysis up on what's happening, where it's happening, up to the minute even, and they cite specifically the Department of Defense, and they've just released information showing that there's been upwards of 45,000 wounded troops in Iraq so far.
Yeah. Dar, we're going to take a quick break and return. We'll talk with you more, and we'll talk about the American contractors and the casualties they've been taking in the war in Iraq.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey is family-owned for more than 40 years. That's why when you walk in, you're treated so well. They know what they're doing. Excellent service and great product. They have the best in high-end liquor and an excellent selection of the finest wines. It's the real deal. At Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, you can call ahead and your order will be waiting for you. They treat you like family. Open every day 9 to 9 at 19 Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits ask you to please drink responsibly.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
People are talking about the show. Weekday mornings 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
You guys are, in many ways, so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 33 minutes past the hour. We're talking with journalist Dar Jamail about the situation in the 51st state of occupied Iraq.
Searching for life in the
Thank you, Evis. And if you call the program today, lines are available for you at 888-5 Peter B. Our main man, Matt Renner, is again supporting his Oakland Athletics as they lost to the Tigers in the playoff game yesterday. And Matt will be back with us tomorrow. His buddy John is handling the phones today. So be easy on him when you call. He's still trying to figure it all out. 888-5 Peter B. is my number. That's 888-573-8372. And before the end of this hour, I'll have more information for you on my visit to Eureka. Actually, I'll be in Blue Lake, California, with a live broadcast a week from today, and we'll tell you more about that. Also, we've got another power commentary from Keith Olbermann that we're going to pass along to you before the end of this hour. We continue with Dar Jamail. I want to spell his name again so you can visit his website. There's a lot of great information there, and he has incredible sources, people on the ground in Iraq, actual Iraqis, who send him information on a regular basis. It's DARJAMAIL, Dar Jamail, Iraq. .com. Now, Dar, one of the items that you posted that I referenced a few minutes ago, I kind of misrepresented exactly what the article is about. It is about body counts, but this one is about the civilian contractors employed by the Pentagon who are serving in Iraq. And you say that there are over 100,000 of them in the theater, including Iraq and Afghanistan?
That's correct. It's hard to put a precise number on it, but the number may well be up over 100,000. And it's hard to get the exact number because since these are private companies, they aren't required to provide that information to the public, unlike the U.S. government.
Well, but, and this, again, is a significant increase. The last estimate that I heard was in the 40,000 range.
It is a significant increase, and it's what the U.S. military is doing to avoid a draft. We basically have a private army of private contractors that are in there, both acting as mercenaries, but also doing the support work. I mean, I personally have been on bases in Iraq and seen the people there working for the military, but they are civilians and they are doing jobs like making up the troops' quarters, doing the cleaning, the cooking, repairs on vehicles, this kind of thing, driving trucks for Kellogg Brown and Root, doing demining, go on down the list, doing all sorts of jobs. But there was actually a report, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because just today we've had a report that's come out, an official estimate, that at least 647 of these contractors have been killed in Iraq. And, of course, that doesn't include Afghanistan.
Well, and that's an increase from a week ago. The article you posted listed 428 dead.
Right, and that was a bit older figure, but it is good now that as of right now, as we speak.
Oh, you're correct, because it says that's dated to November 2005.
Right, so it was a bit outdated, but the bottom line is that it's here is our hundreds of thousands of people there, over 100,000, that is, that really, when we talk about the number of dead in Iraq, we hear about Iraq civilian casualties, we hear, of course, about U.S. military casualties, but we don't hear about these contractor deaths. They're rarely, if ever, reported in the mainstream media, but the bottom line is these people are being killed on the ground in Iraq, and then like the article I wrote about last week, this was about an individual who came back with severe post-traumatic stress disorder and ended up committing suicide after he'd come home. And, of course, these numbers, along with instances like that that occur to the U.S. military members who come back with severe PTSD, we just never hear about it.
Yeah. And let's name him since, I think we should at least honor his passing. Tim Iselink is the gentleman you wrote about.
That's correct. And I wrote the article talking with his widow over a long period of time, getting more information. It was very hard for her to get this information out. Of course, every time she talked about it, she had to re-experience this tragedy. But she felt it's urgent that more and more people get this information. So if there are any other families out there in their situation that have had a loved one either killed in Iraq or come back and had this type of tragedy occur, she's encouraging people to speak out because she's trying to get justice, trying to get some kind of compensation from this company that has basically washed their hands of them.
Mm-hmm. The president held a news conference this morning, and I heard part of it on my way to the dentist. and I mention that because I can't actually describe which one I dreaded more, listening to Bush or going to the dentist. It was actually Bush. At any rate, he was asked about the spate of books that have recently been published. We're going to talk to David Korn, co-author of Hubris, next hour. Bob Woodward is on his third book and finally seems to be channeling reality this time. He called the book State of Denial. And that really does capture, I believe, Bush's mentality at this stage. And at this news conference today, he was asked about all the criticism, and he kind of tried to turn it into a trophy, saying, well, gosh, you know, there are a whole lot of books been written about this, and when you make a tough decision, people write about it. And then he was asked if he had any regrets about Iraq, and he said, this is about the fifth time I've been asked that question. And he was better prepared for it this time than he was in that primetime news conference in April 2004 when he fumbled on primetime TV for about a minute and a half. And today's response was that he didn't have any regrets. He wouldn't admit that he made any wrong decisions or bad choices. But he did cite Abu Ghraib, as he pronounced it, Abu Ghraib, as a low point in this American military adventure, and that he regretted it, that it cost us in our image around the world. But it's been fixed now because those responsible have been held to account. I screamed at the radio at that point, but apparently there was no response on the other end. And so he then went on to say that he had made the right decision, and that taking out Saddam was the right decision. He tries to boil it down to that very simple notion. And so with that said, I'm just curious about your sense of the president's mindset, and would you agree with Woodward's characterization that he's in a serious state of denial?
Well, I absolutely would agree with that. I think this is clearly an individual with some serious mental and psychological problems, as well as being a pathological liar. This is someone, when asked about the recent figure that we were discussing earlier of 655,000 Iraqis excess deaths in Iraq as a result of the U.S. invasion and occupation, basically denied it, saying that the methodology used in this report was, quote, pretty well discredited, end quote. And I think I covered why there's nothing out there that's a feasible method of discrediting the methodology of this report. And then when he was further asked to comment on the number of dead in Iraq, he said that he stood by a figure that, quote, a lot of innocent people, end quote, have died in the conflict. So he's really clearly not operating in reality whatsoever, and especially with Iraq, where he continues to refuse to, even to learn the proper pronunciation of words that he himself should well know. And, of course, if anyone was brought to justice who was responsible for Abu Ghraib, I think we should have to, of course, start with the commander-in-chief.
So, Dar, we know that James Baker, who is the, I refer to him as the consigliere of the Bush family, he's the Baker Botts power lawyer from Texas, who famously has clients like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I believe the Kuwaiti government has been or currently is a client of him and his law firm. And he was tasked by the president to head up a commission that includes Lee Hamilton, who was on the 9/11 commission and way too many commissions before that, plus some, you know, pretty interesting Democrats like Leon Panetta from Monterey, who used to be a congressman and was Bill Clinton's chief of staff in the White House. And they have completed a study. They have written a report. But we're not going to get to see it until after the election because they didn't want to politicize it. Now, I find that a reverse explanation or an excuse that simply doesn't wash. But what do you expect to come out of this Baker Commission a day or two after the November elections?
Well, it's again, these days with the amount of scandals and truths that are being revealed about members of this administration, go on down the line, whether it be Bush or Cheney or Condoleezza Rice or other Republicans in the government itself. Really, I wonder what else it would take for people here to really rise up and get active and get very busy in getting these people out of office as soon as possible, because starting back from the stolen election in 2000, going into Enron, go on down the list. It's just been one scandal after another. So I apologize for coming off as a bit pessimistic at this point, but I feel like we have quite enough ammunition right now, even just talking about what we've just covered on the show today.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm just curious because it does appear they're setting the stage for some sort of a policy change or some, you know, pragmatic changes related to Iraq. And in that question that Bush dodged today, he kind of alluded to that, you know, that we adjust as we go along, as we need to. They never admit that what they're adjusting from didn't work. But, you know, he makes that statement as a way of saying that we're flexible, which, of course, doesn't appear to be the case. But I think that my guess is that the Baker Commission or team, whatever it's called, will signal that it's time to change plans and that after they are beyond the reach of the voters in November, the president will probably feel more free to make a move like that.
Well, yet at the same time, Peter, today the U.S. Army announces that it intends to keep the same level of troops in Iraq until the year 2010.
I read that, yeah.
So, again, it's let's watch what they do and not what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just one lie after another with these people. Mr. Bush, of course, will stay the course right off the cliff, which I think we already passed that point a long time ago in Iraq. Again, let's just watch what happens on the ground, because they certainly have no intention of changing their policy there whatsoever.
Yeah. Dar, you gave a powerful litany a moment ago about the outrages of this administration. I would only augment it with the September 28th Senate and House passage of what I have dubbed the Joseph Stalin Interrogation, Detention, and Kangaroo Court Act of 2006. And it really disappointed me that on October the 5th, despite a national effort to mobilize Americans into the streets and convenient lunchtime scheduling of many of these activities, there was a very disappointing turnout across the country of people who have a lot to be outraged about.
It really it is kind of baffling as to why people aren't concerned enough to start taking some more personal risks. Or just get a little bit busy and finding one small thing you could do in your own community to try to cause some change here, because it's we are just so far beyond the level of outrage I thought would have been necessary, and yet more and more information comes out daily about more scandals these people are engaged in, about Exxon posting record profits, and you know the scandals I think that are very clearly behind that. Impending war with Iran, this horrific news today of over 500,000 Iraqis being killed as a direct result of the invasion and occupation. I keep wondering how much more it's going to take. Are people going to wait until we have martial law in this country, which is very quickly moving towards a police state as we speak? I just really wonder how much more it's going to take.
Yeah. Well, Dar, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us today. And once again, Dar Jamail, DarJamail, DarJamailIraq.com is your website. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, we'll talk again soon. Going to take a quick break and return. If you want to call in and talk about something, I got a few minutes. I want to tell you about my plans to broadcast live from the Eureka area a week from today. And if you're in Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, or even on the Oregon coast in Brookings, I'd love to see you there. We'll give you the details coming up right after a break here. And we're also going to give you a brief snippet of a recent Keith Olbermann commentary. He's really hitting the high notes on key. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Good day, sunshine.
Stop searching. We've got what you're looking for. Sundays, 3 to 5, The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
In Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that pagans and the abortionists, the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you helped us have.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at a high level of our government.
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Tom Hartman.
This government, particularly this Republican government, has run amok in giving away money to people like the oil industry and Halliburton and whatnot.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
That in no way is benefiting the majority of people, no way is contributing to infrastructure or democracy in the United States, and is purely enriching a small number of people. And things are going nuts.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon, on KRXA 540.
Minutes away from the hour, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. Coming up right after the top of the hour, our next hour will feature David Korn as our guest for the whole time. He's the co-author with Michael Isikoff of Newsweek of the new book called Hubris, and we're going to go in-depth with him on the CIA leak case and whether Karl Rove was ever indicted or not. Lots of other details we'll talk about, too, regarding the selling of the war in Iraq to the American people. And I want to give a shout-out to our listeners at one of our early affiliates, KGOE, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, because next week I'm driving on up your way, and we're going to broadcast live from the auditorium at the Del Arte School of Performing Arts. Now, that is in Blue Lake, just east of Arcata. And it's going to be a live broadcast from our usual time, 3 to 6 p.m. And there'll be a live studio audience there, so I want you to come by at Del Arte in Blue Lake. And if you want more information on the event, call KGOE. And my friend Tom Seaborn there is coordinating the event. And he can sign you up for tickets and all that sort of thing. And you can look up the KGOE number. Maybe he doesn't want me to give it out and get a whole wave of phone calls. But it's going to be next Wednesday. And you can get advanced ticketing by calling KGOE. And we're going to focus on issues related to elections, election integrity, and voter confidence. As you know, I consider those to be critical issues of our time. And we'll be joined by a whole roster of people, including Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com and others who are on the front lines of this struggle to
get our election system back into the confidence zone and really be able to produce credible voter participation in this country going forward. So that's next Wednesday, a week from today. I hope you'll be able to join me. Now, we'll be live from 3 to 6 p.m., and in the event work interferes or maybe your duties as a parent to pick up the kids, there's also going to be an evening event from 6:30, I think, until 8 or 8:30, and we're going to do a media roundtable and talk about various issues such as the election problems. So I hope you can join us either for both of those events or for just the live broadcast in the afternoon next week. That's Wednesday in Blue Lake at the Del Arte School of Performing Arts. Looking forward to seeing all of you out there. Well, on this program, I've shared with you my own pleasant surprise at the evolution of Keith Olbermann. I had written him off as a jock who'd gotten tired of the sports thing when he moved over to MSNBC. But maybe the jock thing serves him well because he has real backbone and muscle, and he's not afraid to use it on his show. Here is a clip from a broadcast, I think, one or two nights ago, in which he took on the issue that I care a lot about right now, which is the lack of habeas corpus rights in this new legislation that will strip that long-time human right from those detained by our government, and the detention process will be much easier and more whimsical than even before. Let's listen to Keith Olbermann.
Why does habeas corpus hate America? And how is it so bad for us? Mr. Bush says it gets in the way of him doing his job.
And this legislation passed in the House yesterday is a part of making sure that we do have the capacity to protect you. Our most solemn job is the security of this country.
It may be solemn.
Bush do solemnly swear.
But is that really his job? In this rarely seen footage, Mr. Bush seems to be describing a different job.
And well, to the best of my ability,
this is his inauguration, the oath of office.
The Constitution of the United States.
Scouttown has obtained a copy of this Constitution of the United States, and sources tell us it was originally sneaked through the Constitutional Convention and state ratification in order to establish America's fundamental legal.
And let me pause it here for a second, because as Olbermann is reading this part of his script, they cut to what appears to be a surveillance photo of the Constitutional Convention in 1770, whenever it was, 73, 74. And it even includes a timestamp across the bottom. Very clever stuff. Good work.
Principles. But this so-called Constitution is frustratingly vague about the right to trial. In fact, there's only one reference to habeas corpus at all. Quoting, "The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it." But even Democrats who voted against the Military Commissions Act concede that it doesn't actually suspend habeas corpus.
The bill before us would not merely suspend the great writ, the writ of habeas corpus. It just eliminates it permanently.
Senator Pat Leahy.
There is considerable debate whether the conditions for suspending habeas corpus, rebellion or invasion, have even been met.
Conditions for suspending habeas corpus have not been met. We do not have a rebellion.
Arlen Specter, Republican.
Invasion.
Well, we're not in a rebellion.
John Kerry.
Nor are we being invaded.
Okay, maybe the debate wasn't that considerable. Nevertheless, Countdown has learned that habeas corpus actually predates the Constitution, meaning it's not just pre-September 11th thinking, it's also pre-July 4th thinking. In those days, no one could have imagined that enemy combatants might one day attack Americans on native soil. In fact, Countdown has obtained a partially redacted copy of a colonial declaration indicating that back then, depriving us of trial by jury was actually considered sufficient cause to start a war of independence.
That's the Declaration of Independence.
And fashionable idea that, quote, liberty, unquote, was an unalienable right. But today, thanks to modern post-9/11 thinking, those rights are now fully alienable for your protection.
That's Keith Olbermann, and as I said, he has really demonstrated that he is an American who understands that we are in a pre-fascist state, that we are slipping from the liberty and freedom that we have enjoyed over many generations into a police state controlled by radical Republicans.
These are dangerous times, friends. We're going to take a break and return with more on the Peter B. Collins Show right after the news. David Korn, co-author of Hubris, joins us right here. Visit my website, peterbcollins.com.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A baseball star dies when his small plane crashes into a New York building.
All of a sudden, it goes BOW! I run out the building, I look up and I see smoke, and everybody started screaming.
The president says he'll stick to diplomacy.
You know, we won't attack North Korea.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. On 10-11-2006, an event eerily reminiscent of 9-11-2001. This afternoon, a small plane flying over Manhattan slammed into a luxury high-rise condominium building, the Bel Air. This woman saw the plane in flight.
It was bobbling up and down, like going to the left and going to the right, and it did a little bit of a loop and was flying low, and it just crashed right into the Bel Air, just exploded.
With smoke and flames spewing from the windows of a tall building, CBS News correspondent Byron Pitts found the comparisons were unavoidable.
And then you think terrorists.
You think 9/11
right away, and it was very scary.
It was the frightening similarities to September 11th that temporarily sent the Upper East Side of Manhattan into a panic. An aircraft had crashed into a high-rise building. The single-engine, four-seater Cirrus 20 aircraft was flying north over the East River when eyewitnesses say it made a sudden, hard turn and slammed high up into a 50-story condominium.
I'm on the 32nd floor, and a plane was coming west, and I saw him lose altitude, and the right wing dipped, and I said to the person I was on the phone with, why is this plane doing acrobatics in the middle of New York City?
Among the dead, New York Yankee pitcher Corey Lytle. It was his plane. Lytle had just earned his pilot's license about a year ago.
Sports reporter Chris Raggi, who covers the Yankees for WCBS-TV in New York, says Lytle seemed as committed to flying as he was to pitching.
It was something that he picked up after the end of the regular season with Philadelphia last year. He lives in California, was out west a lot and played out west and wanted to be able to navigate the southwest a lot easier and thought if he could fly as an avid golfer, he could get to places like Pebble Beach a lot quicker. So he really concentrated on the offseason on getting his pilot's license, and he did.
Lytle was flying with an instructor who also died. The episode triggered a Homeland Security response. Fighter jets were scrambled over several major American cities as a precaution. Now this.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know how I discover things you guys miss?
Exactly.
Like this sausage stuffed cannelloni with its layers of flavors. Never had it before, have you?
Well, it's brand new.
Italian sausage, homemade meat sauce, melted cheese.
Your pasta Milano, I discovered that.
Tender chicken, garlic cream sauce. I get it here all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a Mac Grill classic.
But I discovered it first. I'm a discoverer. Like Marco Polo.
Well, you're old enough.
From pasta Milano to new sausage stuffed cannelloni, discover the many flavors of Romano's Macaroni Grill.
If you drive a Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury and need service, there's never been a better time for great deals than right now. It's the Right Now factory authorized service event at your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. You'll find special offers by the truckload on tires, brakes, batteries, and more. All installed by Ford factory trained experts. Genuine parts and service at Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealerships. Hurry, the Right Now factory authorized service event ends soon.
Tomorrow at the United Nations, U.S. Ambassador John Bolton says he'll formally introduce a new draft Security Council resolution on North Korea. President Bush, at a news conference today, said there should be serious repercussions for Pyongyang's nuclear tests, and he rejected direct negotiations.
In explaining why he thinks it's better to deal with North Korea in talks that also include China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea, President Bush vented some frustration.
I can remember the time when it was said that the Bush administration goes it alone too often in the world, which I always thought was a bogus claim to begin with.
Mr. Bush used the Rose Garden session to reaffirm his commitment to diplomacy while calling for stiff UN sanctions. And again, he offered assurances that the U.S. has no intention of attacking North Korea. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
On Iraq, the president says he's willing to adjust the strategy, but remains upbeat.
We're on the move. We're taking action. We're helping this young democracy succeed.
General Pete Schoomaker, the Army Chief of Staff, says things could change, but he's planning to keep the current level of troops in Iraq through 2010. That was quickly slapped down by Defense Secretary Rumsfeld.
General Schoomaker and the Army does not set force levels in Iraq. They're not the ones who determine how many will be there and till what year they'll be there. That's a function of General Casey and General Abizaid reporting to me and to the President.
The site of last week's horror in Pennsylvania Dutch country will never be used again. The one-room Amish schoolhouse will be demolished tomorrow. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar, this is Susan.
I'm at a gas station in Austin, and my brother just called me, and he has locked himself out of my truck. I'm standing 200 miles away from him.
Can I have your 4-digit security PIN number?
507.
OnStar can send a signal to unlock your doors in most cases.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and send an unlock signal to the vehicle.
That's why I sold my Ford truck, and I bought a Denali and a Hummer.
Well, there you go.
The peace of mind OnStar offers is more affordable than you might think.
Your vehicle doors are unlocked now.
The doors are unlocked?
Yep.
Let me call the cell phone he called me on. Brett, they're unlocked? Okay. OnStar, I love you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for using OnStar.
The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles, and unlimited use of all safety and security services costs only $16.95 plus tax per month after that. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com. OnStar by GM.
From the left coast, another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show with me, your humble host, Peter B. And this hour, we'll talk with David Korn, the co-author of the new book, Hubris, about the selling of the Iraq War and the CIA leak scandal, right here on the PBC show.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. People say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground.
I would apologize to the Monkees for the license used in this song, but they never apologized to me for all that bad music they made in the late 60s. David Korn joins us this hour. He's the Washington editor of my favorite magazine, The Nation, and he also somehow maintains a position as a Fox News Channel contributor. He's the author of the best-selling Lies of George W. Bush, the novel Deep Background, and the biography Blonde Ghost. David Korn, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good to be with you, Peter.
Nice to talk to you again. And, boy, you've been really busy, haven't you?
Well, I'm still plugging the new book.
Well, the president was plugging all of these books at a news conference this morning. He seemed proud of the fact that the Woodward book is out, Frank Rich's book, yours, and so many others that really create a mountain of information that supports skepticism and other critical views of the Bush administration. He turned it around as kind of some kind of a benchmark that so many books have been written about him because he made a tough decision.
Well, you know, that's one way to spin it. I mean, our book is called Hubris. It's the story is the inside story has been scandal and selling of the Iraq War. And it shows that the Bush administration used fraudulent, flimsy, and phony intelligence to take us to war, and then felt like it had to preserve and defend that sales campaign. And if the president is proud of that, well, I suppose that's his prerogative. I just called up the transcript here for our listeners for the question that he got today at the press conference. You know, as you know, we have a shelf full of books about Iraq, and many of them claim the administration's policies contributed to the difficulties there. Indeed, in our book, which I co-wrote with Michael Isikoff, we talked about how at the State Department, the CIA, and at the Pentagon, every single problem that we've had in Iraq since the invasion over the past 3 years was predicted by somebody.
Yeah.
But yet the Bush White House didn't take any of this seriously and did absolutely no planning. And I can tell you some anecdotes about that. But so, you know, he's asked, you know, all these books out there, you know, I'm wondering, says the reporter, is anything you wish you would have done differently with regard to Iraq?
I've been asked that question five times now, and I rehearsed an answer.
And the president says, speaking about books, somebody ought to add up the number of pages that have been written about my administration. There's lots of books out there, a lot. I don't know if I've set the record or not. Actually, he hasn't. There are far more books about Lincoln than there are about President Bush.
Yeah.
But I guess that means I've made some hard decisions and will continue to make hard decisions. And, you know, David, this is probably David Gregory, this is about the fifth time I've been asked this type of question. It shows in a way that he just can't take a question head on.
Well,
he's living
David,
in his own world.
David.
But let me just get to the...
He's living up to the title of your book.
Well, actually, to a way. I mean, you know, hubris means that you think you know better than anybody else, and... And he goes, anybody else said, you know, there's just a lot of look-backs. Presidents don't get to look back. Well, if you're not full of hubris, you do look back. And you look back and you think about what you did right, what you did wrong, and how that can, you know, change the situation. And you have an open mind and you sometimes change course, which seems to be something that this president's not able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing that I found, you know, pretty amazing this morning was when he was asked, I won't get out here. Here. This is one I want to get to. Another question, in which the president was asked about this new report published in Lancet about Iraqi casualties, claiming that 655,000 Iraqis have died since the Iraq War. They call these excess deaths. Those are deaths that otherwise wouldn't have happened.
Correct.
And it's a far larger figure than estimates. I've always used the estimate over 100,000. Last December, the president said 30,000 Iraqi civilians have died. And the president said, no, I don't consider it a credible report. I do know there are a lot of innocent people who have died, and that troubles me. And I applaud the Iraqis for the courage in the face of violence. He goes, I'm amazed that this is a society which so wants to be free that they're willing to, that there's a level of violence that they tolerate. What?
Wow.
That they're tolerating this violence because they want to be free? I mean, that's just, it's almost a non sequitur. It's completely absurd. And this is our president talking.
Well, and
people didn't ask for sectarian violence that kills 3,000 people a day, that leads to dozens, sometimes scores of headless bodies being dumped on the streets of Baghdad.
And that
Baghdad
doozy,
every single day.
That doozy lives up to the title of Bob Woodward's book, State of Denial. We're talking with David Korn. As he mentioned, he's co-author with Newsweek's Michael Isikoff of Hubris, the inside story of spin, scandal, and the selling of the Iraq War. And it is that and more. It's a book that's rich in detail, doesn't have some of those omniscient sources that Woodward uses. I think it's very well written. The one look back I would ask you about, David, is there's some of us who are a little irritated that the information that you provide about the CIA leak case, and in particular the fingering of Richard Armitage, was embargoed during the time from you, you know, when you finished the book until when it was published. And that was a critical period of time that I guess was from, you know, April until late August. And do you have any regrets that you and Isakoff, who have access to, you know, adequate weekly outlets, sat on this story in order to promote your book and make it more of a blockbuster instead of bringing that information out at the time you acquired it?
Well, no, because it wasn't even that long a time. We really didn't nail down a lot of that story until the June-July period, and as we were finishing the book. We had parts of it, not all of it, and I'm glad, you know, we kept working it and trying to figure out how things came about, and some sources started opening up late in the process. So, you know, it was a lag time of really, the story came out with the release of the book at the end of August. It actually came out ahead of the book. We put it out even before the book was available for sale, about a week, 10 days early. And so, I mean, listen, if you write for a weekly, sometimes you wait a week to get a story out. If you write for a monthly, sometimes, you know, you wait a month to get a story out. If you write for Mother Jones, which comes out,
yes,
you know, bi-monthly, you don't put it on the website and right away, you wait 2 months to get it out. And, you know, it wasn't as if we waited, you know, to get it out, say, after an election.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically in the course of a summer, and I don't think there's anybody who would say that, knowing that information in mid-July, which is probably when we nailed it down,
mm-hmm,
is any different than doing it at the end of August.
But you understand my point, and Woodward is worse.
I was talking to Jack Schaefer of Slate Magazine about this very particular issue today and yesterday. I think he has a piece up, it may even be up by now, about this. And to me, there are a couple ways of measuring it. One is how long you sit on something, how important it is, and what that wait period actually means in the real world. I mean, you remember that the Washington Post sat on a story about Senator Packard molesting women and didn't put it out until after he had been reelected.
More significant and more recent was the New York Times sitting on the NSA story for over a year.
Right, they sat on for over a year. And I think the thing that, you know,
That's not related to a journalist publishing a book, though. That's where I see a somewhat of a conflict of interest.
Well, again, you know, if you're talking about sitting on something for 2 months, I can tell you I've had stories that have sat at the Nation for that long. I mean, you know, it's not that long a period of time, and
mm-hmm,
it is, you know, and it comes out. It comes out, you know, actually it came out in Newsweek. Because Mike worked at Newsweek, they got a piece of the book, and because I work at the Nation, they got a piece of the book, which was the expose about what Valerie Plame really did at the CIA.
Right, I read
and,
that.
You know, and mm-hmm, that's indeed kind of part of the deal. You know,
mm-hmm,
they let us go do the book, and we do the book, and we come back with news, and we put it in the book, but we also give it to our home bases to break ahead of the rest of the media.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, I don't think anybody can point to any harm done. The question is, if you have, say, information that there are no WMDs before the war, and you sit on that so you can put it in your book after the war starts. You know, that to me.
Yeah, Woodward, did you hear that?
To me is when you're violating your journalistic obligation.
David, we got to take a break, and we'll return and talk about a lot of details in the book. It's called Hubris, and you're welcome to call and talk with David Korn. He's with us this entire hour. And my toll-free lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372 or 888-5-PETER-B. Puts you right through to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim Ross of National Real Estate Holdings is back as our special guest on Rock Rollin' Real Estate this Sunday at 10 a.m. Jim has got special offers just for Rock Rollin' Real Estate listeners. He has D.R. Horton Homes giving him a 2% discount on a purchase and a 2% discount towards closing costs to any deal in Austin, Houston, and Fort Worth, Texas that he's involved in. Call him at 866-383-9977. He also has a great deal in Palm Springs, but you have to listen this week to Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Sunday mornings at 10 right here on KRXA.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from Reality Radio, Saturdays 4 to 5 p.m. We're speaking on subjects not often talked about, like fear around money, relationships, or children, how we judge people, aging, happiness, and with our Central Coast's most colorful people, and of course, you. Call in or just listen. Reality Radio, Saturday afternoons, 4 to 5, with me, Sheila Gale, on KRXA, sponsored by Myrick Photographic on Fremont Street in Monterey. Myrick Photographic in Monterey.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
And good afternoon, Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic in and out of our Monterey Peninsula at this hour. We don't have a lot to tell you about, which is good news if you're trying to make your way back home. One of the exceptions is San Juan Bautista, southbound 101 at Betabel Road. An injury crash has that lane partially blocked, 3 to 4 cars involved, emergency crews at the scene. In Watsonville, we should remind you of that nighttime road work. It actually begins in the early evening. It's on Highway 1 between 129 and Freedom Boulevard. Caltrains will have one lane closed in each direction as they have for the past several weeks. That word brought to you by Alaska Airlines. Looking to go south? Alaska Airlines can whisk you from San Francisco to San Diego nonstop 4 times a day starting October 29th. Book your flight today at alaskaair.com. Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540.
Host, we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with David Korn, the co-author of Hubris.
To start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, I never like them. Those who write laws,
Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
A clear threat to the United States.
And there's dozens of ballistic missiles.
It has sponsored and sheltered terrorists.
Paying suicide
bombers. Chemical weapons are equally chilling.
Biological weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agent to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX and sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death and destruction.
Death on a massive scale.
Time to go home, to take our boys arena, to take our girls arena, to take our boys arena, to take our girls. Time to go home, to take our boys arena.
As we mentioned, David Korn is co-author of Hubris, subtitled The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. Co-authored with Michael Isikoff of Newsweek, and David Korn is the Washington editor for The Nation magazine. David, as we rejoined here, I played excerpts of some of the speeches given by Bush and Cheney and Rice and Powell in the run-up to the war against Iraq, the invasion and occupation. And your book offers rich details on the infighting and the struggles between various agencies, including the CIA, over the end run created by Doug Feith and the Office of Special Plans at the Pentagon, which was producing their own intelligence and research, much of which was based on flawed sources like Ahmed Chalabi of the Iraqi National Congress and Curveball, the mysterious source known to be a drunk and now known to be completely unreliable. It's fascinating the way you tie together all these different elements and bring out new information, particularly about the infighting that occurred.
Well, thanks for saying this. I mean, the book is not a polemical tract. It's a narrative. You know, Isikoff mm-hmm. and I try to do a behind-the-scenes account of what was going on at this White House, the CIA, the State Department, Congress, and the Pentagon about these fights over the intelligence and how that affected or didn't affect the sales campaign that the administration put together to justify the invasion of Iraq. And then, of course, after they got there, they had to keep trying to justify it because they had made promises to the American public about WMDs and connections between al-Qaeda and Iraq that just, you know, weren't true. And people might think they know some of the story, and perhaps they do, but I was surprised by getting into this that it just gets, it's just worse the more you look into it. You know, the Curveball stuff, the Curveball was the source. He was an Iraqi defector who was picked up by the Germans, in essence, and turned into a source who claimed that he had been he had worked on these mobile biological weapons labs in Iraq. And the story is almost unbelievable. The CIA never talked to him, never met him. What happened is he would give statements to German intelligence in Arabic. They would translate it into German. Then they would give it to the Defense Intelligence Agency at the Pentagon, the Pentagon's intelligence arm, and they would translate the German statements into English. So we now have two levels, this is a third language here, mm-hmm. and give it to the CIA, and the CIA, in the basis of this, game of telephone, would then claim that they had evidence of biological weapons labs. And all along, there were these indications that the guy was not reliable. The British, who were getting the same reports, thought that he was, that he was acting bizarrely. We show one scene when Tyler Drumheller, mm-hmm. who was chief of the European division of the CIA, which is partly in charge of this operation because it was done through liaison with the German intelligence service, goes to lunch at a Georgetown restaurant with the German intelligence representative in Washington, the station chief here, and the guy tells him, "Well, we think Curveball's a nut, and we don't think he's accurate, but we'll never say this officially."
Yeah.
So now,
David, from well outside the Beltway, it was apparent two things. A, that the Bush administration was hell-bent on going to war against Iraq,
right.
No matter what excuse would work. And number two, that the Congress, including Democratic leaders and the intelligence communities, were intimidated by the administration and in various ways submitted to the aggressive leadership that particularly came from the vice president's office.
Well, there's this. A lot of people go out and say that the vice president was pressuring people at the CIA. I'm not sure that's actually true. But what the vice president and the president were doing was sending a strong signal. This is what we want to hear about, WMDs. And we quote analysts in our book who've said, you know, hey, you don't have to be an idiot to know what they want. You also have to be an idiot to know that if you say something opposite, you're going to get hammered. You know, it won't be accepted. So people bent with the wind, as one top-level CIA officer told us, and, you know, took the, you know, flimsy stuff and made it stronger and made sure the White House saw it. And the indications they had that were contrary to the president's case for war got buried and no one really paid any attention to. We tell the story of the of Naji Sabri, who was the foreign minister of Iraq, who, through a Lebanese journalist, makes contact with Bill Murray. He's not the comedian,
yeah,
but
right.
he was a station chief, the CIA station chief in Paris. And he wants to basically, you know, tell the Americans what's up with the WMD program, and in essence, there isn't much of one in Iraq. And the Bill Murray had a terrible time at CIA headquarters, where people were saying, we don't care what the foreign minister of Iraq has to say about this. We can't believe him to begin with. And at one point, you know, other CIA officers, you know, get into a shouting match with Bill Murray in the halls of the CIA, and they say, you don't get it.
Yeah.
This isn't about intelligence.
We got to pause for a break, but that's just...
This is about regime change.
Another example of hubris. David Korn, co-author of the book, is with us. We'll talk about Powell's speech to the UN and the CIA leak case next, and we'll take your calls. 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just-renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Was it for real? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. According to the Washington Post, the White House is not 100% sure that North Korea's nuclear device actually worked. The Washington Times went further, quoting an intelligence official as saying it was more fizz than pop. Now, with nukes, the testing is everything. These are weapons designed not so much for the physical battlefield as for the battlefield of the mind. For North Korea, a successful test is designed to force a negotiation. For us, however, a successful test actually prevents negotiation because we won't give in to nuclear blackmail. However, if we conclude it was not a nuclear explosion, but simply a hellaciously big conventional explosion, no nuclear blackmail. But Dave, you say, if it happened, it happened. Well, not necessarily. Oh yes, supposedly it blew a 4 on the seismograph, but we control all the good seismographs. We control all the good satellites. Suppose we just say, well, North Korea, you say you exploded something, but we didn't hear anything. We heard a little rattling somewhere, but we figured that was the sound of your dear leader having a cow. As a matter of fact, your test was so pathetic, we're not sure you're even in the axis of evil anymore. In fact, we're moving you to the spindle of irrelevance. From what we see on TV here, the main function of your million-man army is to hold up thousands of red placards and flip them at the same time during soccer games. You want to be a player on the world stage? Sell a bacon cheeseburger for 99 cents. In fact, your own people might appreciate that. Now this.
Get the good stuff!
Even with today's high-tech engines, an oil change every 3,000 miles is still the most important maintenance you can do. It improves fuel economy and dependability and helps you avoid costly repairs. And right now at NAPA, you can get Valvoline conventional motor oil for just $2.39 per quart. Plus, buy 6 quarts and get a $6 mail-in rebate. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. NAPA. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
For over 50 years,
I have been helping people restore their skin's natural beauty. This is Claudie Assalit of Claudie Skincare Studio in Carmel. I bring a certain je ne sais quoi as well as 3 decades of experience in top spas and salons. Claudie Skincare Studio features a selection of the finest products, and I am always training to stay at the cutting edge of skincare technology. At Claudie Skincare Studio, we specialize in healing facials, peels, Reiki, waxing, lash tinting, as well as nutritional advice to ensure your skin vibrancy and good health. To set up an appointment, call me Claudie Assalit at 625-4101. That is 625-4101. Smooth, soft, beautiful skin can be yours. Call 625-4101. A bientôt.
The Collins Show.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties 'cause he could. Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
That's a folky named Yikes McGee from Baltimore, Maryland. It's called Bad President. 33 minutes past the hour. We continue our visit with David Korn. He is the nation's Washington editor, co-author of this powerful new book, Hubris, subtitled The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. And it weaves the narrative together with a lot of new information about Joe Wilson, Valerie Wilson, the nature of the work she did, the details behind his trip to Africa that led to the famous op-ed piece in July of 2003 in the New York Times, and then the efforts to discredit Joe and Valerie Wilson. We're going to get to that portion of the story in just a moment. But, David, if you will, I'd like you to set us up. I've got a clip of Colin Powell's speech from the United Nations early in February of 2003. And the backstory that you and Isikoff offer in the book really shows how much he resisted the efforts to get on message with the Cheney-Rumsfeld cabal, as it's been characterized by Powell's number two, Larry Wilkinson.
Yeah, there were always two components to the administration's case for war. People who spend more time focusing on the WMD case that Saddam Hussein had stockpiles and oodles of chemical and biological weapons and was minutes away from a nuclear bomb. The other component was that Iraq was in bed, in league with al-Qaeda. Bush would say that Iraq was dealing with al-Qaeda, and the point was that, literally he would say this, on any given day, Saddam Hussein could hand over his WMDs to his pals in al-Qaeda. And the vice president's office, Grutter Libby in particular, were completely enamored of this notion that Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda were two peas in the pod. In fact, Paul Wolfowitz, the number two at the Pentagon, had embraced the theory of a little-known academic that al-Qaeda was really basically nothing, and that Saddam Hussein was really the hidden hand behind it and was thus responsible for all of al-Qaeda's actions, including the 9/11 attack. When it came to making his presentation at the UN, Powell was given information by the CIA on all the WMD stuff, which of course turned out to be wrong, but the vice president's office kept giving him, you know, dozens and dozens of pages, you know, that supposedly proved the connections between al-Qaeda and Iraq.
And at one point you cite Cheney kind of kidding Powell that he had popularity and therefore he could afford to lose some.
Well, yeah, he was picked to this because he was the most popular member of the Bush administration. There was, you know, it was pretty much a no-brainer. And they wanted him to go up front and, you know, and endorse this connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, which would really, you know, bring the case home if that was true. And, you know, he would read their stuff, and we quote Larry Wilkinson in the book saying it was sort of just a string of connections. You know, Scooter Libby gave him a 24-page brief at some point, there was just a string of connections. Like you said, it was like out of the Bible. And Abraham begat Joseph, and Joseph begat Michael, and Michael begat Dave, and Dave begat John. And that's why John and Abraham are together involved in, you know, plotting against the United States. And he and Powell were both just couldn't believe that, you know, that any serious person leading the U.S. government would be into this. And at one point, you know, Powell took Wilkerson aside and said, "I'm not reading this." And I can't say the expletive on air here, but I'm not reading this crap.
Mm-hmm.
So he was more profane about it. And as it turned out, they still managed to get some of that connection material into his speech, which came from a Al-Qaeda commander who had been tortured in Egypt after being taken there by the CIA, who had claimed that he knew that Iraq was giving chemical weapons training to Al-Qaeda. It turns out, and this is relevant to the debate we just had in Washington over the terrorist state detainee legislation, mm-hmm. that he only said this because he had the you-know-what beaten out of him.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to Powell's crap. Okay, this is the United Nations, February 5th, 2003.
Use these horrific weapons on another country and on his own people.
Colin Powell spoke of thousands of liters of anthrax that were unaccounted for.
This is Scott Ritter.
Probably hiding it. And then he held up a little vial of white powder, and he said a couple teaspoonfuls of white powder like this, if launched against American cities, could kill thousands of Americans. If he was truly to reflect the Iraqi capability, he would have held up a bottle of Diet Coke and said the Iraqis produced anthrax that looked like this. It has a shelf life of 3 years. The last known production batch came out in 1991, so even if Iraq was hiding this brown sludge liquid, it would be useless today.
That's Scott Ritter in a rejoinder to Colin Powell. The clip is taken from Robert Greenwald's Uncovered, the truth about the run-up to the war in Iraq. And the other thing, David Korn, I remember watching Powell's speech, and when he went to the slide that depicted these alleged mobile weapons labs,
yeah.
My comment was, any 14-year-old with PowerPoint or other, you know, computer software could have created that. It was not compelling evidence in any way, shape, or form, and my BS detector went into overdrive at that point.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that there were some experts in the field who said it would not be practical to produce biological weapons that way. That be too dangerous, too risky. The guys working in those trailers would probably end up killing themselves. There were problems with disposal. And, you know, if you read newspaper stories very carefully, a couple, not in the Times, but in the Washington Post, I remember, and you went deep into the stories, you'd find a couple of sentences from people who were biological weapons experts who would say those things. But everybody else was just bowled over by this, and the only evidence they had for this came from the defector we talked about earlier named Curveball,
mm-hmm.
who was a drunk Iraqi defector who, and this is what, you know, what gets me. It's not just that he managed to dupe the CIA. There were people within the CIA who for months had been screaming about Curveball and saying he's not to be trusted. We have to get, you know, until we get one of our own people in there to talk to him, we can't evaluate anything he says. And even, you know, the night before at 1, 2 in the morning, one of these CIA officers who I mentioned earlier, Tyler Drumheller, was on the phone with George Tenet saying we can't go with the Curveball stuff. And yet all of that, all those doubts and all that contradicting information, which turns out now to have been accurate,
mm-hmm.
Was put aside.
Yeah.
David Kay, who was the head of the Iraq Survey Group, went into Iraq after the invasion and discovered, you know, within days, that Curveball was a con artist, a scammer.
Yeah.
You know, he found relatives who would say, relatives and friends of his who said, "What? U.S. intelligence is listening to this guy? He's a congenital liar. He's never told the truth. He's a rat." And his story fell apart immediately. So it was the type of situation that if anybody had said, "Well, let's do due diligence," to use a corporate term here,
mm-hmm.
The case would not have held up. But the CIA people at the top and the people at the White House who wanted this sort of intelligence were not interested in vetting any of this stuff. the way you would even grade an eighth grade school paper.
And as the Downing Street memos accurately described, they were fixing the intelligence around the policy. Let's take some calls. Dave's on the line from Humboldt. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with David Korn.
Peter and Dave, reality as I connect it is that it would be more than charitable to think of them as grossly incompetent. This is a planned behavior. It went to the earliest days of PNAC. They had spelled out their intentions for invasions in the Middle East, and they even indicated that they would need a new Pearl Harbor type of event to get the people to support it. It is also a fact that everything about this administration is profits, big profits for the very wealthy. This war is extremely profitable to these Halliburton, Bechtel types. They are shifting the entire U.S. Treasury and much, much more into the pockets of these few folks, and that is a willful planned behavior.
Yes, it's cash plus debt. David Korn, your reaction?
Well, having looked at this rather closely, I don't believe that the main motivation at hand here was to create, you know, a war economy that would lead to greater profits for Halliburton. The fact that that would happen certainly, you know, was not a disincentive to anybody involved. But I really believe, for their own reasons, that, you know, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and for what I would consider wrong reasons, believed that they were taking national security decisions. Now, but they also believed that the public wouldn't buy their arguments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wouldn't buy the arguments that we have to go in there and change the Middle East and, you know, we'll basically, you know, gamble a little, swing for the fences, roll the dice, as Chuck Hagel, Republican senator, called it at the time, and that the public, to get the public on their side, they had to do something quite simple. Scare them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they went with these statements of WMDs. I mean, listen, at any given point in time, you know, and we note this in the book, Michael Isikoff and I, you know, the president could have made a, what I would call an honest case for war. We don't, you know, Saddam Hussein's a bad guy. He's a dictator. Let's, you know, maybe we should, you know, this is one dictator, maybe we should try to, you know, get rid of him with a military action. We don't know what he has. But he has had WMDs in the past, and that's good enough for us to worry about him in the future, given the new dynamics of a post 9/11 world.
But David, I think this team is incapable of really dealing honestly. It's
well,
all marketing.
I mean.
It's all
spin. And then we would have seen whether the public and Congress accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the honest argument to make. I had friends. People I argue with on TV in Washington who are making that argument or making the human rights case for war, and I would say, listen, I can't call that a dishonest argument. I can disagree with it, but with the president, you know, Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, you know, and Vice President Cheney and Condi Rice to get out there and talk about mushroom clouds and the gathering threat, there was absolutely nothing gathering about Saddam Hussein's WMD threat. He posed a WMD problem, but not a WMD threat.
Well, he was bluffing.
Yeah, of course he was bluffing. I mean, Charles Dofer, who took over the Iraq Survey Group from David Kay,
right,
you know, has said, I've heard him say that, you know, he believes that Saddam Hussein, you know, was worried more about Iran, his longtime enemy, which is a bigger, more powerful country than Iraq was at the time, and he wanted to try to, you know, abide by the international call to get rid of his weapons of mass destruction, but not reveal all and then show Iran that he really didn't have anything. He was sort of he was walking on a tightrope.
Right. We're going to take a break and return with David Korn. More of your calls coming up, and we're going to talk about the Wilson CIA leak and Karl Rove's involvement there. If you have a comment, join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. My guest is David Korn, the co-author of the book Hubris. You're listening to KRXA 540.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
Then they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants, but we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
And once again, good afternoon. Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic in and out of our Monterey Peninsula. We are going to go out first to Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 after Highway 129. That also doubles, of course, as Riverside Drive. An accident reported. Apparently, it involves one car and a bale of hay that car hit that is reportedly blocking at least one lane there. Our other problem is in Capitola, southbound Highway 1 before Park Avenue. It's a stall that blocks the right lane. And the usual brake lights turning on right at the fish hook as you make your way off of southbound 17. That right now extends all the way into Capitola. And that word brought to you by Alaska Airlines. Looking to go south, Alaska Airlines can whisk you from San Francisco to San Diego nonstop 4 times a day starting October 29th. Book your flight today at alaskaair.com. Frank Sullivan with traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 11 minutes away from the hour. David Korn is my guest, co-author of Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. Brings a lot of new details forward about who Valerie Wilson was, what she did at the Central Intelligence Agency, the role that Joe Wilson played in the trip to Niger to examine the claim that Iraq had attempted to purchase or acquire yellowcake uranium for the purpose of creating nuclear weapons. And it's a fascinating story. And David, when you look at this, number one, is Joe Wilson a hero in this case? I mean, he was a former Republican-appointed official in the diplomatic corps. He was the number two guy in Baghdad who faced down Saddam Hussein in 1991. And yet he's been remade as kind of a dangerous lefty.
Well, in the book we call Joe Wilson an imperfect critic, but who was who raised soundly questions about the administration's pre-war handling of the WMD intelligence, particularly on the whole business about Iraq trying to find uranium for its, now we know, non-existent nuclear weapons program in Niger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, prior to all this, he was, you know, seen as sort of a mainstream establishment foreign policy type in town. He had worked, you know, he wasn't a Republican appointee. He was a career diplomat who had good positions in both Republican and Democratic administrations over
okay.
the years.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1999, his wife, Valerie Wilson, gave money to Gore. And he gave money, actually, to George W. Bush in the presidential, in the Republican primary, thinking that, well, he'd be he might be a president like his daddy was, who Joe Wilson had worked with and actually had admired on foreign policy grounds. So there was a lot of talk when he wrote his piece in July 2003 of what the CIA was doing, sending a known partisan who was against the war and a Democrat on a sensitive mission for the CIA that obviously he had been sent to do in the White House, do in the president. But in 2002, he was not, there was no war to be against. He wasn't opposed to the war at the time. And he had worked on Niger issues when he had been at the NSC during the Clinton years as head of the African branch of the National Security Council in the White House. And he also had the extra advantage of, as a private business person at this point, of having worked with or knew a lot about the uranium industry in Niger. So actually, if you had to pick one guy in Washington to go on a trip like that, he was the fellow. And in fact, what we disclosed in the book for the first time is that 2 years or 3 years earlier, the CIA had dispatched him on a similar trip to see if he could find out any information about the activities of AQ Khan in Niger. AQ Khan is, of course,
the Pakistani.
The Pakistani scientist who, sent nuclear weapons materials around the world to Libya, North Korea, and all sorts of places.
David, let me jump in because our time is tight, and I got a couple of specific things I want to ask you about relative to the investigation. Patrick Fitzgerald knew about Richard Armitage as a source, of the leak to the media very early on in his investigation. Yet he went forward, he indicted Libby, and continued to grill Karl Rove, five different appearances before the grand jury. Have you ever seen the letter that Fitzgerald allegedly sent to Robert Luskin, Rove's attorney, saying that there would be no charges against Rove?
No, but we have sources who were involved in the investigation, and I'm pretty much convinced that there was such a letter, and Fitzgerald, the thing is with Rove, confirmed Armitage's leak to Bob Novak, but then he leaked the same information on his own initiative to Matt Cooper of Time magazine. And when he was questioned by the FBI initially and then Fitzpatrick's Fitzgerald's grand jury, he basically fessed up to having confirmed Armitage's leak to Novak, but claimed that he had not leaked information, or they didn't remember leaking information to Matt Cooper. And for a year and a half, that was really what Fitzgerald pursued, whether Rove had lied about that. And indeed, he had leaked that information. Fitzgerald's instincts were right. And at the end of the day, though, he felt he didn't have a case to bring against him for perjury that was, nothing as strong as he could bring against Libby, because saying that you don't remember something when you do is very hard for a prosecutor to prove and win a perjury conviction. While in Libby's case, he came out and said that he had had conversations with people and he didn't know this or that about Wilson, and all that was contradicted by the testimony of the people, like Tim Russett and others, and by a really good document trail that shows that he did know about Joe Wilson and his wife and had made proactive efforts to find out more about them. So that's why, in the end of the day, Rove slipped by Fitzgerald while Libby didn't.
Now, there was a report in May that Rove had been actually indicted by the grand jury. Just a minute. There remain indictments on file that are sealed.
Don't wait, Peter, don't waste your time.
Why?
Because there are indictments that are sealed in that courthouse, but they have, but there's no reason to believe they have anything to do with this case. I know they have nothing to do with this case. I know from people close to investigation that it's done. They will prosecute the Libby trial, and if more information comes out, they can revisit things. But the investigation is done.
So you believe it's over?
I know it's over.
Okay.
Not belief. I know it's over.
What
story in May had no factual basis.
Okay. What is your comment based on that it's over?
From talking to people involved in the investigation, people who would know people who were doing the investigation, people who were making decisions who to indict and who not to indict.
Mm-hmm.
I think our book shows that we had access to people in the middle of all that.
Mm-hmm. I'm still skeptical because, you know, from all the information that I've been able to glean, Rove was a key player in the pushback against Wilson.
I mean, our book demonstrates mm-hmm. that he and Libby were trying to undercut Joe Wilson
right.
in a number of ways, and that ended up that included leaking information on Valerie Wilson that had to do with her CIA employment.
So why has Fitzgerald then not clearly exonerated Karl Rove?
Well, because, you know, leaking negative information on somebody is not against the law. Now, the law that's in question here is the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, but to win a conviction under that law, you have to be able to prove, not just know, but prove that the person, the government official who did that leaking, knew for certain that the person he was talking about was indeed an undercover officer of the CIA. And if you just go out and say, well, if Rove said, well, I knew she worked there, I thought she was involved in the trip, but I didn't know exactly what she did, that's a defense that Fitzgerald would have to prove was a lie in order to win a conviction. So, you know, proving state of knowledge, state of mind of somebody is incredibly difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think at the end of the day, nobody who leaked, including Richard Armitage, is indicted for the leak because the threshold in that case and the threshold for that law
mm-hmm.
is very high.
Mm-hmm.
And Libby got nailed because he lied about leaking to a grand jury and to the FBI agents. Rove got off because he didn't, you know, he said he didn't remember as mm-hmm. opposed to giving a cover story as Libby did.
All right, David Corn, we're out of time. I want to thank you for a great hour and a powerful book. We didn't get to talk about the secret Anabasis plan, about WinPAC and Laurie, what's her name, Milroy?
Milroy. Let me just tell people, for more information on the book, they can go to my website, davidcorn.com, and that's Corn with a C.
Very good, sir. Nice to talk with you. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next, a report that Dennis Hastert, the Speaker of the House, may intend to resign, and the free speech zone on the Peter B. Collins Show.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Join broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks and native healer Cloud Pyler for an hour of Native Health Radio and discover how sacred medicine can save modern life. Honest, direct, funny, informative, it's programming that makes you think. Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It was New York Yankees pitcher Corey Lytle at the controls of the small plane that crashed into a Manhattan high-rise this afternoon.
I heard a big, like, explosion, so I looked around and I saw the building. I saw an aircraft, and it was, like, sliding down towards the building and hit the floor.
The cause of this apparent accident is unknown, but it was similar enough to the events of 9/11 that U.S. fighter jets were scrambled over major American cities as a precaution. The crash started a fire in the building, but residents all escaped. The only fatalities were Lytle and his flight instructor. Rick Peterson was Corey Lytle's pitching coach when he played for the Oakland A's.
It's sadder than sad, and it's, you know, there's no words to describe a loss of somebody that you spent some very special times with.
In Los Angeles, Lytle's mother-in-law talked briefly to reporters gathered outside his home.
It's just a big loss and a big tragedy for everybody involved.
Lytle leaves his wife, Melanie, and a 6-year-old son. A 28-year-old California man who joined Al-Qaeda now faces a federal charge that carries the death penalty. CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambidakis has the story.
The FBI refers to Adam Gadan as the American voice or translator of recent messages from Al-Qaeda threatening death to Americans. Justice Department officials, fed up with what they saw as jihadist propaganda, decided to seek treason charges against Gadan. To underscore that they mean business, officials note that this is the first time since World War II that treason charges have been brought.
He's also charged with providing material support to terrorists. At his news conference today, President Bush said he's determined to get the job done in Iraq, but if military commanders think a new strategy is called for, he'd support it. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports there's a new estimate of the human toll.
A study published in the British journal Lancet estimates 655,000 Iraqis, 2.5% of the entire population, have died as a consequence of the war.
It shows that, to us, that violence is widespread in the country and that this is a major risk to people in Iraq now.
To understand how large, consider this. The same percentage of the much larger American population would be 7.5 million dead.
President Bush rejects the study.
Now, I don't consider it a credible report. Neither does General Casey, and neither do Iraqi officials.
General George Casey, the U.S. commander in Iraq, says he hasn't seen an estimate higher than 50,000. A man from New Orleans, abducted yesterday by Palestinians in the West Bank, has been freed unharmed and without the kidnappers' demands being met. They wanted Israel to release jailed Palestinians. 24-year-old Michael Layton Phillips went to the West Bank for a 3-month stint as a volunteer English teacher. He recently asked to stay another 3 months. On Wall Street today, the Dow Industrials down 15 points to 11,852. The NASDAQ off 7 points to 2308. This is CBS News.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only 2 locations, everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call You and Us. Member SIPC.
If there were a store on your main street called Peace of Mind, would you pay it a visit? On main streets all across America, there is such a place, New York Life. We have been offering customers peace of mind for over 160 years. Peace of mind comes from our agents who adhere to the values of financial strength, integrity, and humanity. So look for us in your town. Peace of mind is why New York Life is the company you keep.
As with all real estate, when you talk about affordable housing, the three things that count are location, location, and location. WBBM Radio's Bernie Tafoya has the story in Chicago.
Crossing guard Anita Brown says she makes about $15,000 a year, and that the combination of transportation and housing costs are a huge chunk of her budget.
It takes up a lot of your money.
The study by the Center for Housing Policy says many low-income people who move to areas with affordable housing find that that housing savings is lost when you figure in the cost of transportation to jobs and elsewhere. Researcher Carrie McCarowitz says some cities are starting to address the problem.
In the D.C. area, where they're in some of the outer counties, we're getting a greater mix of affordable housing near their transit.
Bernie Tafoya, CBS News, Chicago.
Under pressure from officials around the country, R.J. Reynolds has agreed not to sell its Twist-A-Lime and Mocha Taboo cigarettes in the United States. Critics say those flavored smokes are designed to appeal to youth. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
At Romano's Macaroni Grill.
You know how I discover things you guys miss? Exactly. Like this sausage stuffed cannelloni with its layers of flavors. Never had it before, have you?
Well, it's brand new.
Mm, Italian sausage, homemade meat sauce, melted cheese.
Your pasta Milano? I discovered that.
Tender chicken, garlic cream sauce. I get it here all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a Mac Grill classic.
But I discovered it first. I'm a discoverer. Like Marco Polo.
Well, you're old enough.
From pasta Milano to new sausage stuffed cannelloni, discover the many flavors of Romano's Macaroni Grill.
If you drive a Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury and need service, there's never been a better time for great deals than right now. It's the Right Now factory-authorized service event at your participating Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership. You'll find special offers by the truckload on tires, brakes, batteries, and more. All installed by Ford factory-trained experts. Genuine parts and service at Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealerships. Hurry, the Right Now factory-authorized service event ends soon.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and this is your free speech zone. We take your calls this hour. the part of the talk show where we invite you to do the talking. My lines are wide open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. It's toll-free, 888-573-8372 or 888-5-PETER-B. Well, we've had some pretty powerful conversations today. Dar Jamil discussed with us the increase in the estimated carnage in Iraq. Over 600,000 Iraqis have died since the U.S. invasion in March of 2003. And we spent last hour with David Korn. Fascinating look at the run-up to the Iraq War, the way it was sold to us. And, of course, the case involving Joe and Valerie Wilson, the CIA leak case. So there's plenty of for us to talk about, and you are welcome to join this conversation. Maybe you're listening on KBBR 1340 in Coos Bay, Oregon. Time for you to give us a call. KGOE 1480 in Eureka. You can dial us up. You know the number, 888-5-PETER-B. Our new listeners in Phoenix in the daytime on KPHX 1480. You can dial in, 888-5-PETER-B. Also, our flagship station, KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz. You're always welcome to call. And we're also on the air in Sacramento in the nighttime at 1240 Talk City. Wherever you are, however you happen to join us, I'm always glad you're listening. And in case you can't call, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. And that's what Debbie did about an hour ago. She heard the clip we played from Keith Olbermann. She said, "I was thrilled to hear you finally acknowledge that Keith Olbermann is a powerful voice for progressives. I'm a huge fan of his because he's the only true liberal voice in the mainstream news." Well, that's pretty true. He's done four special comments that are about 10 minutes each and that he does at the end of some of his shows. And each one is on his website, countdown@msnbc.com. He admits to being a fan of Edward R. Murrow and often ends his show with good night and good luck. But he'll be the first to admit he's nowhere near the genius of Murrow. Nevertheless, thank you for letting your listeners know about him and check out the special comments. You'll be floored to hear him call President Bush a liar, among other things. Truly a breath of fresh air like you. Signed, Debbie M. Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate that comment today. Also, we are standing by. We had hoped to connect with a reporter at Mother Jones Magazine. Josh Harkinson is an investigative fellow there, and if we can track him down, he'll share the story. But his report today at MotherJones.com is that Speaker Dennis Hastert has confided in an unusual man, a pastor, that he will resign as Speaker of the House. We'll get the details for you if we can get in touch with Josh, and if not, I'll summarize them for you a little bit later on here in the program. 888-5-PETER-B is my number, and up first, let's see, it's Pete from Scottsdale on line one. Hello, Pete, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter, how are you? This is my first time listening to you. You've got a good show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to have you listening.
Hey, Peter, I've got several comments, and I guess it starts off with a simile that of the guy that gets shot 35 times in the back, and the Republicans come up and say it's the worst case of suicide we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of their tactics here in the fear-mongering. But the comments I have to make are, it seems to me that in the time of war, the Congress or the President can usurp companies for the product of the war. And in all these humongous profits that these warmongers are making, it seems to me that the Congress should say, okay, Halliburton, we're going to nationalize you. And we're going to nationalize the oil companies, and they're not going to make any profit because they're going to become, like the CIA, they're going to be a public entity.
Mm-hmm.
No profits, no nothing.
Well, Pete, if you recall, after World War II, there were a series of investigations into war profiteering, and one of them actually identified the Bush family and the Walker family as having participated in war profiteering during World War II.
Well, and that's part of my point. Because even after President Bush says, well, you know, we've got to follow the money trail and da-da-da-da-da, reminds me of the RICO Act, where the FBI used to track organized crime and say, okay,
right,
find out where the money is, and we'll prosecute those that have made money. And then you tie in the NSA wiretaps that have been happening all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, well, when did the war happen? Who? What calls were made to whom? And where were their, get the IRS involved? Where was their money? Where was their level of income before the war started? And how has it changed since? And if it can be found that all the cronies for, all these Bush Republicans, it can be found that they've all profiteered, then to me, that's treason. And then it follows
mm-hmm.
that if a new Congress comes about, it would be unprecedented to have a double impeachment for Bush and Cheney. So,
Pete, I do believe that impeachment is warranted and justified in this case. We do have to be careful on a practical level. I would only support it if the effort were to focus on Dick Cheney first, because if we were able to impeach and remove Bush and just promoted Dick Cheney, I would not see that as an upgrade. If we were able to impeach and remove Cheney, then he would be replaced based on the 26th Amendment, and we could hope that the Senate would only approve some sort of a neutral, nonpartisan figure to serve out the remainder of Cheney's term. And that way, if Bush were in fact then impeached and removed, it would be that caretaker, vice president, who would serve out the remainder of Bush's term. That's the only way on practical levels that I would like to see that go forward. But I have no quibble that this administration has willfully and repeatedly violated the law and deserves to be held to account, not only through the possible removal from office, but also for any financial gain, as you have pointed out. Dick Cheney in particular still has deferred compensation from Halliburton. And at minimum, I think that ought to go into the federal treasury. And I think that would be a great starting point. Pete, it's great to hear from you, and I appreciate your call from Arizona this afternoon. Jason from Phoenix, you're next on the Peter B. Collins Show. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I mean, most of what you're talking about, a lot of people do not research, and it's quite sad, that a lot of people just do not, quote-unquote, have the time to actually look into those facts. I mean, a lot of the names that you're naming off with the cases that are going on, they're all on the PNAC board. Nobody talks about that. Nobody mm-hmm. asks the big questions on the news or anything.
Yeah.
And it's a sad fact, and it's just a lot of people do not want to take the time to actually review the facts of what's going on and how the world is just basically changing while they're sitting there watching sitcoms and, just letting it go by like nothing's ever happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sad fact.
It certainly is.
I do like your show. It's great, and I just wanted to point that out that, pretty much, like you're saying, it's, how many more months before this administration is over?
We've got 2 years and a couple of months.
2 years and some change. So
yep.
Pretty much, I guarantee, right before George Jr. gets out of office, I guarantee there'll be a major terrorist attack, which will totally just leave it, like you said, to where it'll just be able to go right into a fascist state, just be able to take it over.
Well, we certainly have the elements in our political chemistry right now for fascism. And recently on the program, we had a guest on before we were on live in the afternoon in Phoenix, who enumerated 14 different characteristics of fascism. And every damn one of them applies like O.J.'s glove to this Bush administration.
Oh, yeah.
And people are afraid of the F word, and Bush and Rove even tried to get out in front and inoculate the word by referring to Islamo-fascists and referring to Al-Qaeda as fascistic, which, of course, doesn't make any sense. But they simply wanted to get the word in circulation on their terms instead of ours. I thank you for the call, sir. I'm glad to have you listening.
Hey, no problem. Just one more thing, though.
Okay, quickly, go ahead.
Between Republicans and neocons. Just remember that.
Oh, I agree. I do agree, yeah. Thank you very much. 888-5 Peter B. If you'd like to join the conversation this hour in the Free Speed Zone. As I mentioned, Republican Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert has confided in a religious figure, the Reverend K.A. Paul, that he plans to resign. And K.A. Paul has ministered to Saddam Hussein, Liberia's Charles Taylor, Haiti's Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and even Tom DeLay. So I don't know if Hastert really will go through with it, but according to Mother Jones Magazine, and you can visit their website, motherjones.com, for more information, this was something that occurred after a prayer meeting with Reverend K.A. Paul and Dennis Hastert yesterday morning. This is the most bizarre religious counseling I've seen since Jesse Jackson started counseling Bill Clinton over his extramarital urges right after it had been revealed that Jesse had fathered a child with a mistress. We'll get right back to your calls after a quick break here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Once again, good afternoon. Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic in and out of our Monterey Peninsula. We are going to begin in Salinas, where a roadway is shut down. It's the intersection of Spreckles Boulevard and Harris Road. A two-car injury crash involving a head-on accident has shut down the roadway. Medical crews are on scene. In Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 after 129, that's Riverside Drive, an accident on the roadway. And road work tonight in Watsonville, Highway 1 between 129 and Freedom Boulevard, one lane closed in each direction. That brought to you by Toyota Avalon. The Toyota Avalon with an EPA estimated 31 miles per gallon on the highway and all the little extras you desire. Avalon, where luxury meets fuel efficiency. I'm Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic on KRXA 540.
Continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. My lines are open for you. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. Here on the Peter B. Collins Show, there's no political correctness or orthodoxy that has to be observed, and we permit criticism of me, of guests on the program, and anybody else out there, and in particular, unlike some other progressive talk shows, we do not protect Democrats when we disagree with them, their statements, or their actions. And in that vein, Jack has emailed with some interesting comments about our guest last hour. He says, Peter, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've begun to be selective in whom I believe or don't believe. The disinformation in the media and books and blogs is mind-boggling. He says, I heard you say The Nation was your favorite magazine. I'm not as fond of it as you, and the main reason is that David Korn's involved with it. I've come to question his slanted perspective on things political. Thanks for pressing him today on the Truth Out story about the sealed indictments by Jason Leopold. He seemed to get upset regarding this path of inquiry. I'm not sure why so many MSM, mainstream media, journalists, pundits, hosts, are bad-mouthing Jason with such vitriol. Methinks they doth protest too much. I am not sure that David Korn is not a closet disinformationalist. He said, is that an oxymoron? Your questions regarding his sitting on information to sell a book better were spot on. Thank you for your show, and thanks for coming to Eureka Blue Lake. Well, thank you, Jack, and I will be in Blue Lake a week from today. That is next Wednesday, the 18th of October. We're going to be live in the auditorium there at the Del Arte Performing Arts Center. And I invite you to come out if you can spring free for the afternoon. I'd love to have a great studio audience there, and you, too, are invited to join us. And there's an evening event, too, a media roundtable discussion. So if you can come after 6 o'clock, we will welcome you at that time, too. Now we go to Robert in Phoenix. Hello, Robert. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show. How about that? Oh, wrong one. That, now you are. Go right ahead.
Hello, Peter. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to David Korn, and it brought something to mind. I've listened to several authors in the last couple of months, and when it comes down to the Valerie Plame incident, it seems like someone with the level of the political stature that Valerie was in charge of that whole investigation of in Iraq, and Karl Rove, with his nose into everything, knowing all the ingredients of what's going on, I don't see how everybody can back off of Karl Rove not knowing more about who she was.
Well, I will do that when I hear definitively from Patrick Fitzgerald that I am packing up my trench coat and going back to Chicago. This investigation is completed. And that hasn't happened. And I am troubled that a responsible journalist like David Korn, whom I have great regard for, would buy into Robert Luskin's assertions without any proof. I asked him specifically, did you see the letter? Nobody has seen the letter that Luskin says he got from Fitzgerald. Why? If it exonerates Rove, if it says that Rove is no longer a suspect, a subject, or a person of interest in this investigation, why won't Luskin release it? And they're not asking those questions.
They're not.
And I believe that Armitage did leak, but he was not the beginning and the end of this. And Korn flatly did state, yes,
there was
a White House group that was actively pursuing bringing down Joe Wilson by whatever means available.
That's what it seems like, but it seems like everybody's evasive on the point these days. They're backing off on it.
Yeah.
I can't understand why.
Yeah.
And that last email you got, I think, is somewhat representative of what I've been hearing from Mr. Korn over the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
He's very positive and dogmatic in what he's saying, and almost infallible. And I don't buy that.
I don't either. Thank you for the call, Robert. I really appreciate it. Now, line one is Tom from Mesa, Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, I hate it when you say that, but go ahead.
Okay.
I'll get all those people in Arizona trained. Do not thank me. I will thank you.
Oh, okay. Right. I got it.
Good.
I've called several. I listen to Air America all the time. I used to listen to Pacifica in New York, you know, and mm-hmm. WBAI and all that stuff. And what I don't, and there's only a few people that seem to realize something that I think is true, and that is, there are no longer two parties, and it really doesn't matter who gets into office. I mean, if you look at we still had enough Democrats at each significant vote, at each significant bill that went before the Congress this year that got rid of our bankruptcy laws, you know, that keeps funding the war, that passed the war, that repassed
the detention policies.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps going, it keeps happening. I mean, and we keep thinking, well, there's two parties, and I think this is a game that we're allowed to play, and now so that we can still operate under the illusion of a democracy. But if you heard Bush's
news conference
speech today, yeah, he said he's not really worried. Why should he worry? Because he knows the outcome. I believe that he knows the outcome, just like the outcome happened in 2000 and 2004. I don't see it any different. But anyway, I'd appreciate your comments and all that.
All right, Tom. I'll give them to you after the break. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you.
More calls coming up next in the Free Speech Zone. 888-5-PETER-B. People have figured out the number. 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Dennis Donahue is running for mayor of Salinas because he has a vision of a great city and a plan to make it real. Dennis's community safety plan has earned the trust and the endorsement of the Salinas Police Officers Association, the Monterey County Deputy Sheriffs Association, the California Organization of Police and Sheriffs, and the National Latino Police Officers Association. Imagine a great city. Vote Dennis Donahue for mayor of Salinas.
I'm Dennis Donahue, and I approve this message.
I am Juan Escamilla, hands-on owner of Wilson's Tire and Service and candidate for Cabrillo College Board of Trustees, District 6. Cabrillo College is an excellent community college. Let's make it even better by adding state-of-the-art vocational training for our entire community. That's why I'm asking for your vote on November 7th. I am Juan Escamilla, candidate for Cabrillo College Board of Trustees, District 6, and I would appreciate your vote.
Hard work with straight talk. Escamilla for Cabrillo College Trustee, District 6.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're taking your calls at 888-5-PETER-B. It's not even any fun being a legal green card holder in this country in so many cases. Larissa Alexandrovna is a managing editor at RawStory.com. She joins us on the program every week, and typically she brings us news about very important issues like our policies toward Iran and the potential for military action against that country. And last week, Larissa shared a story from her family that is deeply troubling. And we'll get the details for you in just a second. But what we learned is that as many as 1,000 people may have been rounded up by our immigration service in the past few weeks. And some are being held incommunicado, kind of the terms that we give to detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And in the case of Larissa's cousin, she is a legal resident of the United States and has been, I think, for over 20 years. Larissa, thanks for joining us. And I know that you've been busy with attorneys and others trying to work on your cousin's case. Give us the quick setup, because we have new listeners in Phoenix who couldn't have heard your description of the problem last week.
Okay, well, about a month ago, my cousin went on a routine immigration visit to the immigration office in southern Florida, in Broward County.
Mm-hmm.
And she was thrown down, shackled, and taken away, and was incommunicado for 48 hours. So nobody knew where she was. She was disappeared, essentially. She has a heart condition, and she's being held and denied her medication. We are not told why she's being held, but we assume that it has to do with a conviction she had nearly 20 years ago for which she served time.
Mm-hmm.
So she was picked up for no reason. ICE is not giving, ICE is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement,
mm-hmm.
is not giving us any information, and she's been plucked and moved around without rhyme or reason. So that's really the summary of what I was talking about last week, a really high-level
right.
summary.
Uh-huh. And she is at the Chrome Detention Center south of Miami?
No, no. She was supposed to go to Chrome.
Oh.
They decided on a Saturday night to move her to Chrome. On a Saturday night, we still can't figure out why. And they told the family that's where she was going, and the family started towards Chrome. But at some point midway through the trip, they decided to take her to Monroe, which is in the Keys, and it's about 160 miles, I think, away from the family,
mm-hmm.
and she was shackled face down on the floor of the van the whole time.
Wow.
Right.
And so what are the current efforts that are underway to get her released?
Well, we finally, I mean, we're going over a month now of, you know, detention without charge. We've been lobbying to and working, you know, with attorneys to try to get her a court date, and we finally had gotten one, we were told late last week, for this coming Monday, October 16th. At some point last night, and this just happened last night, so you're getting, you know, the scoop, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
At some point last night, she's allowed one call a day, and so she called her mother and said, they're moving me. They won't tell me where they're moving me to, and I don't know when I'll talk to you next. So her mother called the attorney, and they all, you know, everyone was calling to find out where they were taking her to, and they wouldn't tell us. They just wouldn't tell us where they were taking her.
Yeah.
So we spent all night on the phones. We were calling members of Congress. We were, you know, her attorney was attempting to file a stay order only to find out that they had already moved her but wouldn't tell him where to. But it turned out that other women in her particular group, some of whom never committed a crime, I might add, the attorneys got together and they filed in some sort of, and I'm not an attorney, so I can't explain this, but they filed an emergency injunction and demanded to know where their clients were being taken.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out they were being taken out of state. They were being taken to Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And the attorneys argued, you know, in their document that this is essentially kidnapping because no one has a right to just remove their clients, you know, from their attorneys, from their families, for no reason to another state where they would have to get new attorneys and all of that.
Right.
So the women were returned apparently sometime late last night after they, you know, were en route for a little while, face down, shackled. They were returned. And the attorneys have an emergency hearing with ICE officials and a judge on Friday. And that's where it stands now.
Mm-hmm.
To argue to let them, well, in Bella's case, she has a court date. But some of these women, you know, in Bella's case, she was convicted of a crime, you know, 20 years ago, and she served her time.
Mm-hmm.
And since then has been a tax-paying member of society in, you know, for 20-some years.
Right. And there is a clause in the law that, unfortunately, permits them, in some cases, to deport people who are found to have a criminal conviction. It's hard to believe that after 20 years they would impose it at this time.
After 30 years, actually.
Yeah.
But there, she's not alone. There's women in there who, one woman in particular that she's gotten close to, apparently it was, you know, she had, when she was younger, she's lived here all her life. She's from Costa Rica. She apparently sold marijuana, and she went to jail. But since then, she was released, and she has children. Well, they picked her up as part of this raid, and her children were taken away. And for no reason, because, mind you, it's not like she was currently dealing something.
Mm-hmm.
She's already served her time, and she had the children after.
Yeah.
And they're telling her they're going to be deporting her, but they're keeping the kids.
Well, the kids are American citizens.
Right, but if they're going to deport the mother, the kids get to go with the mom, I
mm-hmm.
would think.
Oh, well, unfortunately, you know, family unity is not a mission or a goal of our immigration service, and
right.
they've been dividing up a lot of families, and there was a spate of deportations from the Santa Cruz area over the summer, and many of them sent mothers back to their home countries without their children.
Right, but in the, you know, you're essentially saying that the children are the property of the United States.
Yeah.
When in fact they belong to their parents, unless there is some abuse or negligence, they are still part of that family. So I would think, you know, if you want to deport the mother, you deport the mother along with the kids, and if mm-hmm. the kids want to come back as because they're American citizens, when they're older, they can do so.
Yeah.
In any case, you know, I know I'm rushing through this because I know I don't have a lot of time today. But there's that woman, and then there's apparently a slew of other people, and she's with women, so I don't know what's going on the men's side. But there are a number of women in there who never committed any crime or served or were convicted of any crime ever. They're just legal residents.
So there's been a roundup. It has been kept off the media radar for the most part.
Right.
You estimated that at least 1,000 individuals have been put into this precarious incommunicado position?
Well, that was at the time of her arrest on September 19th in one county in Florida.
So
I don't know how many. ICE isn't cooperating. They're not telling anyone anything. They won't tell us. You know, they've called this operation or this program Operation Return to Sender, which is really cutesy for what amounts to kidnapping.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been asking if, you know, because I don't, we've got a vantage point here because my cousin's in there. Otherwise, we would never know.
Yeah.
And she said that she hasn't seen any or talked to anyone who's not a legal resident. In other words, there are no illegals with her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just crazy that they could just move people in the middle of the night and out of state, this is just unbelievable.
Well, and it's hard to understand why they're zeroing in on this group when the illegal population is the hot-button political issue and is where the pathologies come from. If you, you know, have criminal problems with right. undocumenteds, it's not from people like your cousin who have been here for 30 years and are legal residents. It's more likely to be those who have no grip on citizenship whatsoever.
Right. And I don't know. It's ironic that I was supposed to run an article today. It's timed almost exactly to my deadlines. Every time something, you know, really momentous happens in her case, it's, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, 2 weeks, nothing happens. And then I don't know. I think I'm being paranoid. But
And Larissa, are you getting any interest from the political leaders that you've contacted?
I am not technically allowed to. In other words, it would be a conflict of interest. So,
as a journalist, I understand, but family
right,
members
but
have...
Family members, yes. Mm-hmm. They've gotten a couple of local members of Congress to help, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office. But by and large, no. And Senator Nelson, who is a Democrat,
sometimes.
Who voted for the pro-torture bill...
Yes, he did.
...won't even return calls.
Yeah.
So it's very disturbing. But mm-hmm. what's more disturbing to me is that no one has noticed that this many people disappeared. It's how do you not notice that in a 3 week period in September that all sorts of people disappeared? How is this not all over the news?
Well, and if any of them had been Mark Foley's instant message correspondence, it
right.
would be a whole different story.
Right, but you know, I think since these people are calling it, I think they're supposed to meet some sort of quota, and they're just picking people up randomly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larissa, do me a favor if you would, and I know I don't want to compromise your position as a journalist, but if you could get somebody to send me the facts on your cousin, I'd like to do some inquiries myself of some of the political leaders that I'm in touch with.
Well,
and see
you
if
can
I can
contact her attorney. I can give you that information off the air, and.
Mm-hmm.
You can also contact Jennifer Van Bergen, who's the journalist who did the article on her for Ross story.
Mm-hmm.
Both are good sources of information on this.
Great. All right, Larissa. Well, thanks for updating us on that. And I wish we already had a happy ending, but I hope at some point we'll reach that.
Well, let's hope next time, you know, this time next week, we'll have a happy ending.
All right. Larissa, thank you very much. That's Larissa Alexandrovna. She's managing editor at rawstory.com. And in just a moment, we'll complete a break and get back to your phone calls. You can grab a line right now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. 14 minutes away from the hour, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay Area. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make Monterey and our region such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
And once again, good afternoon. Frank Sullivan with a look at traffic in and out of our Monterey Peninsula. And we are going to begin first with a big problem in Salinas. This apparently involves a Life Flight helicopter. In fact, two Life Flight helicopters, one of which has apparently landed and the other of which is about to take off. Now, this apparently at Spreckles and Harris. That intersection is shut down. This is actually in Spreckles. An injury crash. It was a two-car head-on crash. Emergency crews, again, have shut down that intersection. It's likely to be shut down for a while. And nighttime road work in Watsonville, Highway 1 between 129 and Freedom, one lane open in both directions. Realty World, if you're looking to move up or scale down, look to your local Realty World broker for integrity, service, experience, RealtyWorldNCA.com. Frank Sullivan.
We continue in the free speech zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show, where, when you call, it is not necessary to thank Mr. Collins for taking your call. And Matthew in Phoenix gets it. He says, "Dear Peter, I hate it when boneheads say that. Thank you for taking my call." "Yuck," he says. "They say it because they can't find anyone to listen to their dribble." I think you meant dribble. Dribble is that wet stuff on the corner of your mouth. And then he says, on a more positive subject, "I've been listening this week to your show and have been impressed with your knowledge and fairness." Well, thank you, Matthew. "I was waiting before I emailed my congratulations because sometimes talk show hosts show themselves to be insensitive with some issues like skin pigment, ethnicity, racist human color code for human beings. I hate that. I hope you have your head screwed on right like Tom Hartman." Well, that's a tough standard, but I'll try to live up to it. And our next next caller is Tempe, Arizona-based Terry. Hello, Terry. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good evening, sir, and you're welcome. I called today.
Thank you.
I make a real long story real quick. In the mid-'80s, made a bad decision, found myself in that unfortunate position of being a convicted felon, no longer able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Became very apathetic. Didn't pay attention to what was going on. It's only been, well, I'll be honest, about the last 3 years that I've been paying attention to what's been going on. And it's just tragic that, and I understand sex crimes play in Peoria, but it's just tragic that it's probably going to be something like that that brings this administration down,
yeah,
as opposed to something like what happened to your previous guest,
mm-hmm,
or her cousin, excuse me.
Yeah. Well, Terry, you make an excellent point. Like many people, I am truly surprised by this October surprise. And while it has the utilitarian value of causing the Republicans to disintegrate and to see their power eroded in such a dramatic and quick fashion, it is troubling because the very day that ABC went public with the first round of Mark Foley's emails was a day that most people ignored the fact that the Senate, by a 12-vote Democratic margin, approved this you know, Dark Ages legislation to
the loss of our first, third, fourth, and fifth amendments.
Yeah, to permit torture, to disengage at the president's whim from the Geneva Conventions, to enhance the power of the president, to rubber stamp the misdeeds of the administration on a retroactive basis. This is the amnesty that they were so opposed to for undocumented residents of the United States or illegal immigrants. Immigrants, if you prefer, and yet amnesty for lawbreakers who are Republicans and loyal to George W. Bush, that's okay.
It's just amazing. Now, I would like to say something on a lighter side. Like,
go.
I said, it's only been about 3 years now. The one thing that I find absolutely humorous, I am convinced the media must be doing everything right because both sides seem to hate them.
Oh, I can't get there because the media is not doing the essential service it should provide.
Maybe
which
not
is,
the big time guys, but the information is available if you're willing to look for it.
Well, that is correct. There is a great deal of laziness on the part of the American public, and I don't excuse that. But at the same time, we have seen time and time again the media pose a question, get a lame answer, and move on to the next question.
I do agree with that, but don't you find it kind of humorous that one side thinks they're too liberal, the other side thinks they're too conservative? So by process of elimination, they must be doing something right.
Well, Terry, as part of the so-called liberal media that is so dreaded and so powerful in this country, I just wish we lived up to their billing.
I appreciate your time. Have a wonderful evening,
right,
sir, and welcome to the Valley.
Well, thank you very much. I'm feeling real welcome there. Now to Jake in Arcata, Eureka. Hello, Jake. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Doing okay.
I'd like to discuss the laziness of the so-called mainstream media. You know, here we have this report in The Lancet from Johns Hopkins University today that shows that 650,000 Iraqis were killed in the war, which is about 10 times what the official Bush regime estimate is.
More than 10 times.
Yeah, and it's absolutely unbelievable that we're going to, you know, sit here and just watch these Republicans lie all the way up in this election. I mean, look at everything from Dennis Hastert. Here, this guy says he doesn't know anything about Foley. Of course, Mr. Ford and the chief of staff for Tom Reynolds from New York and Mr. Foley's former chief of staff, you know, comes forward and testifies. And in fact, Hastert was told years ago. Jim Colby, the congressman from Arizona, testifies the Republican leadership knew back in the year 2000 about Mark Foley's activities going after these young pages. You know, the fact is the Republicans were put in charge to take care of our children and our families. Supposedly they were the Family Values Party. Remember that, you know, sales job they put out there?
Sure.
Yeah, well, it seems to be quite clearly untrue. The Republicans don't seem to care about our children. You know, their whole problem with the recent events is that the information came out. They don't seem to be worried that Republican Mark Foley was preying on children. They seem to just be worried that the information came out. And
well, I love
that left-wing conspiracy. Right?
I love to hear the Republican talking heads who, with a straight face, say, you know, we want to know what Hastert knew and what his staff knew, and we want to know what the Democrats knew and what they did to push this out right here in such a timely manner. And that is such a sick joke because, it implies that the Democrats are organized. It implies that the Democrats can pull off a stunt like that.
Yeah, exactly. And plus,
we haven't seen any evidence to support that in the last 5 years.
That's right. And the guy who broke the story, Brian Ross from ABC, the political director for ABC News, Mr. Hopper, and he said that the source was a Republican congressional insider, not a Democrat.
Indeed it was, but when was the last time the facts got in the way of a good Republican spin job?
Yeah, I do recall hearing that Fox News, in fact, was running a D next to Mark Foley's name on their crawl on the bottom of the screen.
Well, we have reports, including a Matt Renner eyewitness account, that it occurred on more than one occasion. Apparently, it was a couple of times on the O'Reilly Factor, and the next morning on Fox and Friends or one of those daytime shows, my producer, Matt Renner, saw it for his own eyes. With his own eyes.
People of America listening to Peter B. Collins understand this is a Republican scandal. The Republican leadership tried to cover it up. They got caught, and Dennis Hastert needs to resign. It's that simple.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if this Mother Jones report is accurate, if this wacky preacher actually prayed with Dennis Hastert and persuaded him to submit his resignation. That's the story, and it'll be interesting to see if it pans out.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Hey, Jake, I'm coming to Eureka next week, actually to Blue Lake. Can I get you to come over for the live broadcast?
Yeah, I'll try to make it. Thanks for the invite.
You bet.
I want to see the show. You definitely are giving people up here the information that they do not get from the mainstream media, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Looking forward to seeing you there, Jake. Now a final word from Peter in Salinas. Hello, Peter. You're on the air. Peter?
Oh, Matt, Peter, it's Jason Leopold calling.
Oh, hi, Jason.
How are you? I know that you only have a couple of minutes left.
I've got 1 minute.
You got 1 minute. Well, first, I just wanted to say that your interview with David Korn was fantastic. I personally, as you know, appreciate those hard-hitting questions. And, I think it says a lot when David Korn had done this extensive investigation to put this book together, but yet he has not seen that letter.
Yeah.
He seems a bit too confident. And, of course, I have a vested interest in it.
I know. I've never had an interview subject like that tell me not to ask a question.
He said, don't go there.
Yeah. I thought that was bizarre.
I was listening. I thought it was a great interview. And to the your listeners who sent in those comments, I certainly appreciate it. But I think it does say a lot that, there's that one document that hangs out there that really would put this story to bed one way or another.
Right.
He hasn't seen it. So,
Jason, hang on. Triggers here. I got a ride.
All right.
We're going to be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations, with another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Listen if you dare.
Again, happy trails.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
For whatever legal advice you need, go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. 375-5100. Alan Kaplan.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. In Los Angeles, Mary Varela talks about her son-in-law, baseball star Corey Lytle.
He's a wonderful guy, passionate in everything he did. I love him. He'll be missed.
Lytle's passion for flying prompted a sightseeing trip around Manhattan today that ended tragically. The New York Yankee pitcher and his flight instructor were killed when their small plane crashed into a high-rise apartment building, touching off a fire.
Mayor Mike Bloomberg says there were no fatalities among the residents.
There were two people in one of the apartments on the 41st floor when the plane actually hit, and at least some part of the plane came into the apartment where they were. Luckily enough for them, they were able to run out the door to the hallway.
Brian Cashman is the Yankees general manager.
We're incredibly saddened by this news today.
Lida leaves a wife and six-year-old son. In Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, the Amish one-room schoolhouse where five girls were murdered last week will be demolished tomorrow. Wayne Wiggins is a local fireman.
To ask some of those children to walk over that threshold again and utilize that school again would be very, very tough. I think that would be very tough on anybody to go back into that situation.
A garage on an Amish farm in the area has been turned into a temporary classroom. You've seen him on Al-Qaeda videos, the young American who preaches the message of radical Islam and justifies terrorist attacks. Federal authorities have had enough. Today, 28-year-old Adam Gadon was indicted on the death penalty charge of treason. Powerful stuff, says CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
Although the language of the treason provision in the Constitution is pretty vague, all you have to do is give aid and comfort to the enemy to be guilty of it, it's rarely been invoked because the burden of proof is high and because Congress has passed laws that make similar conduct a serious crime anyway. Treason is sort of like the nuclear option for federal crimes.
Gadon is believed to be in or near Pakistan, where he allegedly attended Al-Qaeda training camps and served as a translator. At the UN tomorrow, the United States will present a draft resolution to punish North Korea for its nuclear test.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The president wants stiff sanctions
to ensure there are serious repercussions for the regime in Pyongyang.
Mr. Bush used a news conference to repeatedly defend a diplomatic approach to North Korea with other countries.
One has a stronger hand when there's more people playing your same cards.